parliamentary to be outnumbered in this way.
Absolutely unparliamentary.
You know, speak to the speaker about it.
Thanks. That's the reason for being happy, actually, to have such a presence from the department. That's useful. Thank you very much. I won't go much further. We had a very good interaction with the department on a range of issues the other week. Let's consider this a continuation of that exercise. For those who were not there, welcome. And those who were there, salute them, if I may put it that way. let us start, and we will now hand over to Elroy to provide us with an overview. Let me check before I do so. Say to members that we interacted with Elroy over the weekend about the minister and his presence here. Unfortunately, he couldn't be here. He would have loved to have been here, our tones. And that I sent Elroy a communication to the EFEC that he should explain to the minister that we are ready when he is. We expect that when he next comes, he will then provide an overall political perspective of what he would have told us. So we have him on our agenda. And as I said, Tuesdays are our days on the parliamentary program as this committee. It's so designed that so that all our members can be here on that day. So thank you very much. We hope that will work out well. We're looking forward to a very robust interaction with the department in our oversight responsibility broadly. Elroy, please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and Sinoli and honorable members. We really have a full complement of top management of the department. We thought that this is one of the occasions in the calendar of the year where we need to give maximum attention to the full scope of work of the department against the president. Chairperson, I think it would be of some value if I just introduce literally in a minute or two some of the key members that we have here. We have our top management team comprising of Deputy Directors General. I have to the left of Deputy Directors General responsible for monitoring and evaluation. Pink this morning. Then I have next to Mr. Derek Powell, who heads the branch dealing with governance, policy, and research. Then I also have the head of the branch systems and capacity building, Ms. Shiva Makutoko. She's somewhere down the line there. Then also we have heading our urban and rural development branch, we have Ms. Bernadette Leon. To my right. Then we have the acting chief financial officer immediately to my right, Mr. Mbulelo Sigaba, sitting next to me here. Then we also have the head of disaster management in the department, Mr. Lance Williams, sitting next to the CFO. We also have the acting head of the branch for free banking services, intercession, Mr. Mototo Sigiri, sitting right at the end there. We have a range of other senior executive managers and senior managers dealing with other different components. For example, I mean, we can deal with the details later, but we have right at the end Mr. Lita Twanko, who is our parliamentary officer. Next to him, we have Mr. Temba Forty, who is our executive manager or chief director for intergovernmental relations. Then next to him, we have newly appointed executive manager for 2010. Responsibilities in this department, Mr. Freedom Khadebe. And then we have next to Ms. Makutoko, Dr. Mgali, who is responsible for matters such as youth and gender and disability in respect of local government. And then, folding to my right, we have our financial advisor. He was the previous CEO, Mr. CFO, Mr. Craig Terrio. Then we have the head of legal services, Dr. Petra Bauer. Next to him, we have Mr. Omar. What's your surname again? Kibido. I was going to say Sharif. I'm revealing a generation that I come from. He also works in the CFO's office, and then next to him we have Ms. Busi Mdaka, who's responsible for the Integrated Sustainable Rural Development Program. So, Chairperson Committee, we really feel that we are here giving you full attention. Now,
I mentioned earlier on explicitly welcoming Derek Powell. I just wish to say on behalf of the committee that we were told about the bereavement in your family, and we have indicated on behalf of the committee that we pass our condolences to you and your family. Thanks and welcome again. Thank you. Go ahead, Chief.
Thank you very much, and also thank you for the explanation around the Minister. Honourable Members, we decided that we'll start off this morning with the input which I believe will be distributed, and we will not start off with the five clubs this morning. Everything beyond the first input will constitute a kind of bioscope. I will not deal with everything, but I will certainly deal with the key aspects. Now, Chairperson and Honourable Members, in the budget speech to the National Assembly on the 18th of May 2005, the Minister for Provincial and Local Government, Minister Ms. Mali, indicated that, and I quote, through Project Consolidate, we seek to erect the scaffolding for bridging the gap between intentions and outcomes. This is a two-year program of intervention in support of municipalities, and through it we seek to harness additional resources from other spheres of government, as well as from the private domain, to the task of improving municipal performance, and then continues. Now, Honourable Members, today the Department will provide a progress report to the Portfolio Committee on this scaffolding that we continue to erect and on the significant work undertaken over the last 2.5 years. Over this period, we have focused on strengthening and consolidating our system of local government and have coordinated key initiatives of national government that were aimed at improving the lives of our people. Since 2004, four key events have decisively shaped and sharpened the work program of the department. Firstly, in October 2004, Project Consolidate was launched as a two-year hands-on support initiative directed at targeted municipalities across the country. Secondly, in 2005, this Parliament enacted the Intergovernmental Framework Relations Act, which contributed significantly to creating a predictable system of cooperative governance aimed at promoting seamless development planning and service delivery across government. Then, Chairperson, on the 1st of March last year, 2006, the second democratic municipal elections were held, where over 9,300 councillors were elected in 283 municipalities across the country. And then, fourthly and finally, at the extended cabinet lehotla of January 2006, a five-year local government strategic plan was adopted to further focus the work of all three spheres of government in establishing a viable and sustainable local government system. Now, Honourable Members, the synergy of these four events and milestones directly contributed to the progress that we will report on today and that has contributed to local government performance. And these areas include basic service delivery, financial viability and financial management in our municipalities, local economic development, good governance and public participation, and finally, municipal transformation and institution development. In our view, we think we have made good progress in broadening access to basic services in our local communities. The number of households with access to water has increased by 540,000 households between 2004 and June 2006. 85% of poor households in 2006 compared to 55% in 2004 are now receiving free basic water. Similarly, Chairperson, 58% of the poor are now receiving free basic electricity compared to 52% in 2004. On the use of the bucket sanitation systems in established formal residential areas, the backlog was 254 units as at February 2005. By November last year, 2006, a total of 110,000 sanitation bucket systems were eradicated. So, Chairperson, in close partnership with the Department of Water Affairs and Forestry, the Department of Minerals and Energy, this department continues to work in a coordinated manner to extend basic services to our people. The department is also working with a number of stakeholders to improve the financial viability and the resident financial management capability of our municipalities. Firstly, we'd like to report that we are progressively implementing the Property Rates Act, with the first set of regulations already published in 2006. The number of municipalities ready to implement this legislation and benefit from additional revenue streams is steadily increasing. Through Project Consolidate Chairperson, over 75 municipalities, Project Consolidate municipalities were supported on improving their financial management systems, policies and procedures, and also we have assisted them to submit for the first time, many of them, their annual financial statements. And this has been made possible through the assistance of organizations and institutions such as National Treasury, the Institute of Municipal Finance Officers, the South African Institute of Chartered Accountants, First National Bank, and PSU, and also CN Zamanje of the GBSA. We are also aware, Chairperson, that all provinces have embarked on various initiatives to support municipal revenue generation and debt reduction. In addition to the above, the department has deployed 12 chief directors to a number of municipalities, which already has begun to yield positive results in this area of municipal billing. Chairperson, our municipalities are required to play an important role in promoting and creating an enabling environment for local economic development. In August 2005, the department launched a national framework and toolkit on local economic development. This was complemented by the deployment of LED experts to key provinces and municipalities. By the end of 2006, 57 out of the 46 district municipalities and all metropolitan municipalities had already drafted local economic development plans and strategies. And by the end of December 2006, 50% of all districts and metropolitan municipalities had convened growth and development summits, while the remaining are scheduled for completion at the end of this month, March 2007. Chairperson, during 2006, with the invaluable support of the Business Trust, the department undertook detailed economic profiles in the 21 rural and urban development nodes. This exercise will assist in refining the LED plans in those affected municipalities and also in the building of municipal economic development partnerships with key stakeholders and investors. Honourable members, strengthening good governance and deepening community participation also received dedicated attention over the recent period. In this period, we have launched national guidelines for ward committees and gazetted for public comment through the South African Qualifications Authority a ward committee governance qualification at NQF Level 2. Our focus on deepening community participation in matters of governance received a further boost with the deliberate alignment of the presidential Izimbizo during 2005 and 2006 with our interventions of Project Consolidate. Over this two-year period, 27 presidential Izimbizo were held, which covered 58% of all municipalities in this country. Chairperson, in October 2006, a national local government anti-corruption strategy was launched, which was preceded by a national piloting exercise in a number of municipalities across the country. The institution of traditional leadership has a unique role to play in a system of governance and programs of development. In addition to the ongoing support that we provided to provinces in this area, the department has now, together with the National House of Traditional Leaders, developed a national support plan for the institution of traditional leadership in this country. Honourable members, the success of all of these interventions is premised on a strong and capable, robust political and administrative leadership in all of our 283 municipalities. In this regard, we have pursued a number of interventions aimed at positive municipal transformation and institutional development. Under the leadership of Project Consolidate, in April 2006, a total of 112 experts were deployed to 69 municipalities. By December 2006, an increased number of 281 professionals were deployed to 85 Project Consolidate municipalities. A number of benefits are associated with these deployments, including, firstly, the augmenting of technical, financial, planning, project management, and other specialist skills in our municipalities. Secondly, service delivery has been accelerated through the unblocking of blocked projects. Thirdly, support was provided to the development of local economic development strategies. Fourthly, financial systems have been established audit queries addressed, and in a number of municipalities, revenue income generation was substantially improved. And then lastly, Chairperson, key stakeholders are now also involved in supporting local government in a much better organized manner. In 2006, the Municipal Performance Management Regulations were issued. The primary intention was to assist in accelerating and standardizing the process of recruitment and appointment of critical management posts in our municipalities. A simultaneous process was undertaken to assess the level of management vacancies and also the extent to which performance management systems were in place in various projects to consolidate municipalities. Chairperson, we are now happy to report that by the end of December 2006, the department has now developed a fairly good understanding of the spread of municipal management vacancies and also compliance with the municipal management regulations. We ended off 2006 on a high note with the Municipal Performance Excellence Award, otherwise known as the Boona Award, by recognizing municipalities that have displayed outstanding performance in key areas of service delivery, good governance, and development. Chairperson, our training, induction, and capacity building programs aimed at councils and officials received a further boost following the 2006 municipal elections. These programs, in many instances, coordinated with SALG and other key partners, remains a critical area of ongoing attention for this department. And let me also add that later in this week, we will be launching the Local Government Leadership Academy piloting exercise. Chairperson, a number of core municipal systems and cross-cutting initiatives constitute the bedrock for supporting ongoing municipal transformation. In the area of development planning, by November 2006, 98% of all municipalities had adopted integrated development plans. This is a significant improvement on the figure of 69% in the 2005-06 financial year. Also, the high-quality IDPs also improved from 10% in 2003 to 27% in 2006. Chairperson, important resolutions were taken at the Conference on Local Government Communication and also the Conference on Women in Local Government in 2006. Furthermore, the implementation of the Disaster Management Act is proceeding well, with an increasing number of municipalities prioritizing the development of disaster management plans and building the local disaster management capability. Project Consolidate and the 5-year Local Government Strategic Plan have provided national government councils and municipalities together with SALGA the opportunity to take the initial steps in establishing a nationwide monitoring, reporting, and evaluation framework for local government with measurable indicators. This will enable a clearer and more accurate monitoring and assessment of progress and challenges over the medium term. Honourable Chairperson, informed by the progress and the challenges in local government since 2004, the strategic focus and priorities of the department over the medium term are embedded in the lessons of Project Consolidate and the 5-year Local Government Strategic Plan. In the first instance, the department will continue to discharge its leadership role across government in the respect of the 3 strategic priorities of the Local Government Strategic Plan, and these include mainstreaming hands-on support to local government. Secondly, addressing the structure and governance arrangements of the state so that it can better support local government. And lastly, to refine and strengthen the policy and regulatory regime of local government in this country. Secondly, Chairperson, there will be a renewed focus in the medium term on ensuring the mobilizing and coordination of government to meet key service delivery targets and objectives. And these are well known to all of us in the respect of bucket eradication, water supply, sanitation, electricity, etc. At the extended cabinet Lekgotla in January of this year, 2006, it was agreed that the department should focus on 3 critical areas of work in 2007. Firstly, it was decided that we should ensure that municipalities have the fiscal resources and powers to recruit, absorb, and retain appropriate managerial, professional, and technical skills into their establishment. Secondly, informed by the lessons of providing hands-on support to municipalities, spatial-based planning, integration, and our work in the urban and rural development node, there is now a need to bring policy in line with emerging good practice in some of these areas that I've just identified. And therefore, honourable members, a process will now be undertaken in 2007 to review the 1998 White Paper on Local Government, which is scheduled for completion in 2008. And then the third priority for 2007 is that, again, given some of the lessons from local government and also the more recent capacity assessment of the provincial departments of local government and the provincial offices of the Premier, it was also agreed that a comprehensive review of provincial government functions should be undertaken and that a white paper on provincial government should be developed by 2008. Honourable members, in his 2007 budget speech, the Minister of Finance indicated that, and I quote, transfers to local government grow by 19% a year. In addition, municipalities receive the bulk of the allocation for stadiums and related infrastructure for the 2010 FIFA World Cup. The local government sector will share, receive a further 5 billion for the delivery of free basic services, which now reach an average of about 80% of our households. The municipal infrastructure grant receives a 400 million more for the final push to eradicate the bucket system, a further 600 million for the electrification program, 1.4 billion for bulk water and sanitation infrastructure, and 950 million to deliver water and electricity to schools and clinics. Total infrastructure transfers to municipalities now total 52 billion over the next 3 years. Chairperson, over the next 3 years, the share of nationally raised revenue that will go to local government in this country is in the order of 121.7 billion rand. Of this amount, a total of 68.2 billion will go through the local government equitable share in the form of an unconditional grant and 600 million over the next 3 years through the Municipal Systems Improvement Grant. These monies are principally aimed at municipal institutional strengthening and building core systems of local government. Challenges will be addressed in the areas of implementing the municipal performance regulations, filling key vacancies, extending the pool of employees to municipalities, improving the quality and credibility of IDPs, and also building municipal financial management systems and establishing an effective monitoring, reporting, and evaluation system for local government. Chairperson, also over the MTF period, 24.7 billion rand will be allocated to the municipal infrastructure grant, which will focus on broadening access to basic services in the area of water, sanitation, roads, and community facilities. Special attention will be given to these municipalities who have not performed well with their expenditure on the 2006-07 allocations. At the end of January 2007, that should read not 6, 54.4% of the 6.2 billion rand allocated to MEEC for the 2006 financial year was spent by municipalities. Then through the relevant provisions of the Division of Revenue Act, the department has now developed and is presently implementing a MIG reallocation strategy. This strategy is aimed at ensuring compliance with the Division of Revenue Act, while at the same time further incentivizes those municipalities who have demonstrated the capacity to spend, while at the same time providing additional support to those municipalities that are underspending on MIG. Chairperson, a total of 8.4 billion rand has been set aside for stadium development for the 2010 FIFA World Cup. In this regard, the department is also strengthening its own internal capability to monitor and support the obligations of host cities. It should also be remembered that the Minister for Provincial and Local Government convenes the host cities forum. Then, honourable chairperson and members, the department is also responsible for the transfer of funds to six public entities and associated institutions. Over the medium-term expenditure framework period, 265.5 million rand will be transferred to the South African Local Government Association, the Municipal Demarcation Board, the South African Cities Network, the Commission for the Promotion and Protection of the Rights of Cultural, Religious and Linguistic Communities, the Commission on the Traditional Leadership Disputes and Claims, and also the National House of traditional leaders. In 2007, a total of 79.2 million rand will be transferred to these bodies alone. Chairperson, in terms of the estimates of national expenditure for this department, an amount of 100.5 billion rand has been allocated for the next 3 years. And this budget really entails of 7 key programs dealing with administration, governance, policy and research, urban and rural development, systems and capacity building, free basic services and infrastructure, provincial and local government transfers, and lastly, fiscal transfers. Chairperson, subsequent presentations by my colleagues will provide a much more detailed account of progress and the priorities of the department for 2007. In the collective view of the top management of this department, we believe that we have made irreversible progress in constructing the solid scaffolding and bridging the gap between the intentions and the outcomes that our minister spoke about. We would like to thank the Portfolio Committee for the robust engagements we've had in 2006 and the valuable insights received. This has assisted us to keep our sights on creating a better life for our people. Chairperson and honourable members, we thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members of the Committee, colleagues. I will be presenting the budget review of the department. The purpose of the presentation is to highlight the budget allocation for the department and also to inform the portfolio committee members on how the policy priorities that Elroy has already alluded to are funded. Background. The department continues to explore efficient options for financing local government, the ultimate goal being to ensure that each municipality has a sufficient base to execute its constitutional mandate. The local government equitable share was reviewed in 2004 with the revised formula fully implemented in 2007-2008. An additional amount of 600 million for the coming financial year has been added to the local equitable share. The current focus of the review is to assess the impact and implementation of the new property rates legislation, the alignment between the functions and fiscal divisions of powers and functions between Category B and C municipalities, and the restructuring of the electricity distribution industry. The department has 7 programs that
are... Sorry, are we speaking to the slides that we have, or are they in our pack?
It's just the 2 slides that are not there. I beg your pardon. The department has 7 programs that fulfill its mandate. And we've got administration, governance, policy and research, urban and rural development, systems and capacity, free basic services and infrastructure, the local government transfers and fiscal transfers. My colleague we do have the DDTs for the respective branches, program 1 up to 5. I will be talking mostly on program 6 and 7. This is the economic classification of the expenditure for the department. We will be spending for the coming financial year 149 million in respect of compensation for employees. And then on goods and services, we've got 202 million. Those are the major sort of line items of expenditure, which are part of the goods and services. Communication, consultancy services, operating leases for the buildings, and travel and subsistence. So the members will notice that under operating leases, there is a reduction of expenditure from 36 million to 24 million for the next coming financial year. The reason for this being that we're paying the leasing of aircraft for the disaster, and this was classified as operating leases. But now with the new standard chart of accounts requested that we should show this item as a separate item, hence the reduction. But in the details of expenditure, you will see that there is an expenditure item for leasing of aircraft for disasters. Transfers and subsidies, that is mostly to municipalities, 28.4 billion. The transfers to entities, 56 million, and others. Other capital assets, we've got 5.2 million. These are the major line items that our department is transferring to local government. Our local equitable share and the municipal system improvement grant, the municipal infrastructure grant. The equitable share has got no conditions, so the conditional grants are more the 200 million for municipal systems improvement grant and the 7.5 billion for the municipal infrastructure grant. The local equitable share is meant to boost the ability of municipalities to fund the provision of free basic services to poor households and to improve governance and administrative systems. The remuneration of local councillors also comes from this local equitable share. The MIG is a conditional grant which is meant to augment municipal own resources and places municipalities in a better position to provide infrastructure for rolling out basic services, alleviating poverty, addressing backlogs and regional disparities in municipal infrastructure. The grant also seeks to stimulate local economic development and job creation through labor-based infrastructure methods as prescribed by the Expanded Public Works Program. The Municipal Systems Improvement Grant is meant to focus on stabilizing municipal and governance systems, planning and implementation, management support centers, reviewing integrated development plans, and implementing the Municipal Systems Act. These are the transfers that we will be making to our public entities, SALGA, the Municipal Demarcation Board, South African Cities Network, the Commission for the Promotion and Protection of the Rights of Cultural, Religious and Linguistic Communities, and also the Commission on Traditional Leadership Dispute and Claims, and our National House. In the next 2 weeks, the various accounting officers of these entities will be making presentation about their budget to the Commission. If you look at the equitable share, which is 18.1 billion for the coming financial year, the split, 7 billion of that, which is 39%, is the replacement of the RSD levies from the 1st of July 2006. We don't have now the RSD levies. So in order to augment the income that the revenue that the municipality will be losing, an additional amount of 7 billion for 2007 was added, and 8 billion for the coming financial year. The split on the MIG, which is the Municipal Infrastructure Grant Allocation, there is an amount of 13% for the eradication of the budget system, which is 1 billion. That is the amount that is targeted for the December 2007 budget eradication target. So that money is ring-fenced, particularly just for the eradication of the budget system. Water and sanitation takes up the bulk of the budget, which is 3.5 billion. And then roads takes up 15%, which is 1.1 billion. Public municipal service infrastructure. An example there would be tax for municipalities. An amount of 972 million has been allocated. And then social institutions and micro-enterprise infrastructure. Those would be taxi ranks and the sort of market centers. An amount of 324 million has been allocated. And for nodal municipalities, 325.4 million, and then another 5% for other services. This is the breakdown of our MIG allocation in terms of the formula. If I can break down now the MIG per province over the next 3 years, I'm sure the members will see that, let's take Free State as an example. For the coming financial year, an amount of 14% of the total budget of 7.5 billion, which is 1,055,000,000, has been allocated to the Free State government. But if you see the next financial year, that has dropped because there is a targeted budget eradication system to the Free State province. So in order for us to meet those hence the money has been ring-fenced for Baguette allocation. So the backlog on Baguette system is mostly in the Free State, hence there's this allocation of 14%. If you see in the next financial year, then it's 7%. Then also Northwest, it's 10% in the current financial year, but in the following financial year, it goes down to 8%. This is because we are targeting the eradication of the Baguette system around those provinces. This is the beneficiaries of the municipalities over the 3 years of the MIG grant. Starting from 2004-2005, we had 88 municipalities that were receiving the grant, predominantly the 6 municipalities. And then in 2005-2006, we had 187. And then in the current financial year and the outer financial year, we will be, all the municipalities will be receiving the MIG grant. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Members, let's take a few brief comments on the two overviews, mindful of the fact that the more detailed explanations will come through the other programs, but just an overall comment that you may want to make on what you've heard already. Any takers? Comment or question, Peter?
In Elroy's discussion, thank you, Chair, thanks for the presentation. There seems to be a general perception, I don't know where it comes from, and one of your senior managers is even quoted in the press stating that there are serious problems in municipalities compared to capability of spending links. But both here and in our strategic workshop, once the figure 2006 has changed for 2007, it would seem there's no problem because you're spending 54% over 6 months. 6 months. 54% sounds to me okay. But you get a persistent line that there is an inability to spend naked. I can't understand where the perception comes from. And maybe some comments there. And then just a couple of bigger questions on this, if I may. On slide 2, your capital assets for this year are 7.6, dropping down to 5.2. What's the explanation for the drop and then it remains potentially lower than the current year thereafter? Then on slide 4, I'm interested, it's sort of the budget for the Commission on Traditional Leaders, the Leadership Disputes, versus the budget for the National House of Traditional Leaders. They're virtually the same, right through. I find that quite surprising. I would have thought a Commission would have, I don't know what the staff composition is and the reason for the budget, but I mean the National House is an established statutory body, it's got certain functions, it's got a staff complement, sort of everything. How come the Commission has such a sizable budget relative to the National House? I would have thought it would have a sort of once-off fitting, largish budget, does do its job, and then it sort of settles down to something far lower. On the RSC replacement grant, are the RSC, that's on slide 5, sorry, is the RSC replacement grant going to go to the same recipients that had the RSC levies in the past, or is it being distributed on a different basis? One will recall the arguments about the metros, for example, benefiting at the expense of the neighboring municipalities. I think that's it, Chair. Thanks.
Okay. Let me just start with Peter Nesko. The Treasury says in its local government budget and expenditure review that there's work in progress going. And in the response to question, the Minister said that work is going on around finding a way to replace the RSC levy. What do you have by way of the latest around that issue? Is there any development so far? What mechanisms are in place to generate? And are there time frames within which that will be done? The other question that I'm interested in, I would like Elroy to problematize the reference to the white paper on provincial government. Could you just say a little more on that? Both in the previous meeting we had recently and today, I don't hear a reference to SALGA, okay, and the others in terms of their work. I mean, those are entities that perhaps do exist separately, but the department works to support them as well. So I thought that we would get a bit of a take on their state of health and stuff like that. That would be very useful. That's a preliminary comment around that issue. The final one is on page 5 of your overview, Elroy. That first bold part, ensure that municipalities have the physical resources, powers to recruit, absorb, retain appropriate managerial, professional and technical skills. Now, this reference to that Peter spoke about the ability to spend and so on also depend on the staffing level, staffing in municipalities. And there's a lot of turnover and problematic deployments in municipalities. In what way is that in terms of the work that you are planning to handle? What shape is it taking, the monitoring? If I tell you this is what's happening in municipality A, what can you do? What are you doing, if I may just get there? I was almost tempted to ask you, when are you ever going to give me feedback, Elroy, about some municipality in the Eastern Cape? I asked about some things and so on. But I won't ask you. Any other questions, Roman?
No, thank you, Chair. One doesn't know what we should put now or perhaps later, but let me try. I want you to comment on the fact that you reached 85 of the 136 municipalities with experts. Are the interventions with the other municipalities not necessary that experts be sent to them? You've said it's a two-year program. It should have ended last year. Everyone should have been assisted. Or do you don't have the support of the people and enough professionals or whatever, experts to send? So I would like you just to unpack what could be, what has been achieved and not in terms of this numbers. And then also the mixed spending, that be unpacked, but that has already been asked. I necessarily don't have a big problem with the fact that a lot of the money are even spent after the financial year, as long as we settle into a firm pattern, you know, that I mean, the problem is that local government's financial year only starts in July, so that does create, but really the mixed spending must be unpacked for us as a committee. That it's very, we don't understand exactly what is going on. Then on your page 2, Mr. Africa, you reported about financial management. Now, it seems to me that the Auditor General or the Department, the Treasury Department, have now changed the system again. The GAMAP auditing system, shifting the goalpost after municipalities actually had drawn up their audit reports. So we're going to run into problems here again. What is this system then to just report or dealing with a new system again? Because it seems to me that we're going to have very, very bad numbers not complying because they have shifted the goalpost while they were busy auditing. Then, also on the district municipalities budgets, are this entirely transfers at the moment? You know, I think we as a committee have to get some sort of a perception. What does the district municipalities on the income side, where do they get any revenue from? It seems to me that, must be well in the 90% of their budgets will now only be transfers that they receive. One would just like to get a understanding of what is going on at their budgets now that they don't generate their own RSC levies. And then, just for clarity, you reported about the regulations for the property rates act. Wasn't that only draft regulations? Is the first set the real regulations that we issued? And then, just the last thing, in this very room, it was reported to us by the CETA that
if all the municipalities would just appoint the people that is approved on the staff complements and which is budgeted for, between 20 and 30,000 people can be put into work tomorrow. And I said, their finding is this is clerical and lower positions. That's not where there is a shortage. And you report the assistance here for the it was specifically mentioned of appointing people. So it seems to me this is an area of concern which must get the necessary attention, and perhaps you can unpack your problems to intervene in this regard. We know local government is a separate sphere of government. Thank you very much, Jim.
Yeah, thank you for that. Yes, two brief questions. I want to know where the functions which traditionally were done by MIIU have been shifted to. Therefore, where can you look for the resources that are deployed to do that kind of a function? If my memory serves me well, we're told that they have well for the valuable and to be secured somewhere in the department, not lost altogether. And lastly, I see there's a horror plane here. Now, my question is, what does it exactly do, this disaster aircraft? Because when there's disaster, we see FANTF aircraft, picking people from the street. Now, this one, you will pardon my ignorance. Sounds like a very foolish question, but I really want to know, because I see you give it money here. Thank you.
In fact, there's one I left out. I'm following up from yours. That first dark thing on page 5, there was something about municipalities having fiscal resources to absorb staff, etc. Well, first of all, is the $200 million per year in the Municipal System Improvement Grant basically that funding, or is something else envisaged? But more fundamental, I would imagine, how do you define whether a municipality is understaffed or not? I would say it's understaffed, not by virtue of its ability to perform the functions it currently performs and performed last year, but in terms of the constitutional entitlement of how the functions that it has. And if the municipality, for example, is operating, say, fulfilling 30% of its functions, and it has a staff complement which matches that 30%, one couldn't say that it's 100% staffed. It's actually 70% the function is understaffed. So when we talk about ensuring municipalities have resources to absorb staff, are we talking about measured against the constitutional entitlement of our function, or are we talking about something different? Thanks.
Just a final kind of question from me. The department and the budget it receives, including transfers to municipalities, how are you interacting with others with interest in this matter? Your interaction with civil society, does it exist? Do you have any view of the critique of your budget, specifically, for example, the GPLG and its work with local government? And how is that, what kind of critique are you getting? How are you dealing with it if you are, okay. All right.
Thanks, Jefferson. I think I'm going to ask my able colleagues to start responding to some of the issues. Let me just give some assistance to my colleagues. I think there have been a number of questions around infrastructure and lake in particular, and I'll ask Mr. Sigidi to the extent that, if he can respond, and also Mr. Patel, who's our newly appointed DDG there, if he wants to assist. But there are a number of questions around MIG, so if those can be dealt with. The CFO can deal with the issue around the dropping in capital assets. Then there was another question also that I thought. I can come back to that. The issue around the two commissions, I think between the CFO and Mr. Powell. Maybe they can deal with the issue of the budget of those two commissions that deal with the institution of traditional leadership. Ms. Makotoko can deal with the issue around funding of district municipalities, the issue of RSC replacement. I think at least two members have raised that. Mr. Powell, if you want to begin to assist us with some comments around why the need to review the white paper on local government, you can assist in problem-sizing that, as the chairperson has indicated. then also Ms. Makotoko, and Mr. Powell, again, if they could assist with this very important priority that Cabinet has agreed to, this one of the need to recruit and retain the appropriate management skills in the municipalities. If they could make some remarks in that regard, I will also add, Chairperson. I will deal with matters linked to project consolidation specifically. Also, Ms. Makotoko will deal with matters of financial management and GAMAP and so on. She will also deal with the issue of the status of the regulations of the performance of the Property Rights Act. In IIU, again, I think Mr. Sigiri can assist with that. Then the head of disaster management will deal with the question there. And then also the question of Mr. Smith, again, around listing of the resources and the purpose of the Municipal Systems Improvement Grant, what exactly we'll be doing with that grant, but also going beyond that. Again, Ms. Makotoko can make some responses there. And then I think between the CFO and myself, we can comment on the last question raised by yourself, Chairperson, on the budget and how the department. So if I can hand over to my colleagues, please.
That I missed Honourable Member Zika. You had a question, Chief.
It is just a quick additional one on the emergency services. The aeroplane part, that do you really have to hire a special aeroplane? Now, I often see the army coming in when there's a disaster. I mean, I'm just imagining that helicopters in the army and kind of all kind of aeroplanes are parked because there's no war, and war might never come. Can't you just bring in the army rather than utilize resources to finance a special aeroplane when there's an army? I'm sure even the army will be excited to assist in a natural disaster because it means they have an enemy to fight them.
Thanks. We can start with the acting CFO, and then I think the other colleagues must just come in. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. On the commission's budget, that is the Commission for Traditional Leadership and the Commission for the Promotion and Protection of Fire. The Commission for the Protection of Cultural and Linguistic Rights, it has got a five-year term. So hence its program has got timelines, and they are visiting all the provinces, you know, in their own sort of in these hearings. So their budget is more sort of more than the National House, because of there's a lot of traveling by the commissioners. We also have to remunerate the commissioners for the sittings. So its lifespan is limited, and so they've only been allocated expenditure just for the 5 years that they will be operating. Secondly, the National House, with that budget doesn't include, you know, the local houses. When we made the budget presentation to National Treasury for additional funding for the local councils, the National Treasury said the funding for this, because this is a provincial competence, so the provinces should fund this. Hence, we didn't get any additional funding for the National House. I think Shiva will talk about the RSC levies. But the RSC levies, they are distributed among the municipalities, but those that have got the revenue raisings and capacity, and they have got the information there. In other words, they are reporting, because we've got those municipalities that are not reporting, so we don't know whether they have got any revenue raising sort of capacity because of not reporting. Hence, the allocation then doesn't go to those. Thank you, Chair.
I just see Professor Sabatle has come in into the meeting while we've started already, Chairperson, and if he wants to just add on this matter of the budget of those two institutions, I mean, I'll give him the opportunity or also just to add, but I want other colleagues just to come in immediately after him.
Thank you, Chairperson, and the Member at Large. This is very true,
administered by our CFO, that members will recall that at the beginning, the Commission on Disputed Claims had to find its feet and initially the expenditure did not reflect the activities that were supposed to be taken. But due to the fact that, as CFO said, they have a fixed period of 5 years and they were beginning to find their feet and they were now in their stride, and the pressures from the provinces made it possible for them to escalate their activities in the form of public hearings that they had to engage in. And as a result, that led to because of the public hearings that they have to and the fact that they realized that within this 5 year period they were not going to actually fulfill their mandate if they were not really escalating their activities. That was one of the main reasons, the public hearings that they had to be engaged in, and the pressure from the provinces and from the entities involved to really expedite the work that they have to do. All these things have the cumulative effect of making them spend more money on their activities.
Chair, I hope I'm going to do justice to your word problematize the white paper. The provincial white paper. Okay. I think the two parts really go together, Chair, the white paper on local government and provinces. And maybe the starting point is to just pick up on some of the things Alroy said in his address. When we did a review of the first term of local government for the January 2006 extended cabinet local term, we said there that according to all best evidence, the fundamental tenets of local government policy are correct. The fundamental objectives of the white paper are correct. But that there were lessons which had emerged out of 10 years of local governance, longer in fact, if you go back to the 93 Local Government Transition Act. And more recently, the accommodation of local government within the intergovernmental system, which only really came to a head when we passed intergovernmental relations legislation. That these lessons had pointed to the need to take stock of, in particular, the functional arrangements between local government and provincial government, but also as between provincial government, national government, and local government. Now, for example, the whole planning system is an evolving system. We have the municipal IDP, which is a spatial plan. But planning in the other two spheres of government is still largely based on function. And with the NSDP, a National Spatial Development Perspective, the Provincial Growth and Development Strategies, for example, the important lessons coming out there of how we can align our planning systems within the system of intergovernmental relations. So that's one area that we're looking at. There's still a considerable amount of planning regulation which impacts on local government. That some of it is still old order legislation, which we're looking at with the National Treasury, and it's something that Yusuf may want to talk about later on, but that's an area that we've been looking at. We've got a much better understanding of some of the functional movements that are in practice going on in government. I mean, for example, there's discussion at various levels on the housing function. The housing function, I think, in terms of breaking new ground policy, is increasingly seen as a local government function, but it's allocated to provinces. And there's all kinds of complexities around functions that we would be looking at. We would be looking at the relationship of oversight in terms of Section 139, provinces and local government. And we've done a set of capacity assessments of provincial support for local government, and we think that's an area that requires some thinking through and possibly strengthening the role of provinces in that regard. Environmental considerations which are coming to the fore. Local government has critical responsibilities in this regard. But probably the overwhelming need to have these white papers, and particularly the white paper on provincial government, is to create stability and certainty in the system. There has been some discussion about the roles of provinces. Local government has its own dedicated white paper process, which was carefully crafted over many years. And I think the idea of the provincial white paper would be similarly to deal with these interlinkages at the delivery end of government between provinces and municipalities. I can't be any more comprehensive than that, because indeed we're not yet in a position to be any more comprehensive than that. It's a medium to longer term project. We would probably go through a formal process, release discussion documents, engage the committees, engage the country on these types of issues.
Can I just request Elroy, if Mr. Forsey can just talk on the work we are doing on powers and functions so that I can place the fiscal issues on that discussion.
That's okay, thanks. And if you want to jet in on any of these issues, I see you are very shyly raising your hand but not talking, you see. Do raise your voice so that we must recognize you. You want to add on some issue, otherwise we won't see you. We'll proceed, assuming that you are covered. All right. Please, just be assertive. We fought for this country to be free. This includes here for you to speak. Okay.
Thanks, Chairperson. I wanted to respond to the questions of the understanding on me. It is true that we are talking about the understanding with regard to the national and provincial.
Wait a little bit, we'll come back to you.
Okay.
Let's tie this one with the powers and functions.
Thanks.
So what we can come back to you.
I thought you were adding on the previous one.
Okay. Thanks, Chair. Part of the work that we're doing on powers and functions, there's a joint project with the National Treasury, from the Treasury side, looking at the RFA replacement levy. What we're specifically doing from our side is to identify those appropriate functions that need to be performed by district municipalities, or an appropriate division of functions. Functional responsibilities between B's and C's, and out of that also be able to look at alternative funding mechanisms. But what we've started doing is costing some of the core functions that should be performed by district municipalities, functions such as your district-wide functions on governance, on planning, administration. We're costing those, and then that will be part of our engagement with traders to ensure that some of those core functions of districts are actually funded. But also, Chair, maybe related to some of the points Shiva will be making in terms of the time frame, I'm not sure if I know traders, they are working on a proposal. I'm not sure to what extent have they developed something concrete that can be implemented. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Just moving from that, the grant, the transitional RSC levy grant is essentially that it is transitional. What has recently been published is the fiscal powers and functions bill. Whether it is going to replace, it's seeking to replace in the proposed instruments within that bill, to replace RSC levies or not, is still unclear. But what it seeks to achieve is to allow municipalities, in a sort of similar fashion as what is happening with provinces, to propose that would like to impose a local business tax, would like to impose a tax on that is in line with Section 229 of the Constitution, within those confines. So there's a deal that is currently on the Treasury website that has been made public for comments around different funding instruments. What it also tries to do, and aligning with what we are doing around powers and functions, is to see options for tax sharing, given that some municipalities have tax competencies, others don't, between category B and C. It's proposing a mechanism for tax sharing. It's also enforcing a law or regulating fair charges. Currently, that the municipalities are charging them and making a exorbitant profit, but it's not properly regulated. So they are looking at regulating that system. Whether this will benefit districts in the long run, again, it's the same question of whether it will benefit poorer municipalities in the long run or not. What we strongly feel will be a better option in the long run is to define the role of districts moving forward as it has been done, and court that, and begin to make proposals on how the long-term arrangement, governance arrangements of districts are, and how those should be funded, and that has to be funded from the fiscal. Given that most of the taxes that create a significant amount of revenue are already out, competent to the metros and locals. With regard to the municipal property regulations, there are two sets of regulations that we are currently working on. We are not saying that those would be the only sets that we'll be working on, but the two sets that we have identified, the first set was published for implementation last year, and it deals largely with the administration of the legislation. Mainly, there are certain other areas that it deals. It's a comprehensive set of regulations. There is another set that we are working on, which requires quite some detailed research to it, which the minister, according to the legislation, is required to publish upper limits on the rates that should be published to say the rate between categories of property, how it should be taxed. So those require some, and in consultation with National Treasury, we are doing this work so that we can find a workable solution, given that the current system does not necessarily lend to us coming with a uniform system, which is what the Act actually requires. We need to come up with a uniform system that will help us regulate uniformly how the Act is implemented. So those will be passed for comments in the 2007-08 financial year. With regard to the game up and grab, I don't know whether I understood the question well. We remember that when the MFMA implementation started, it was phased in to allow for municipalities with high capacity, as it was defined, to implement certain sections of the Act, and it has been going like that for a period of 4 or 5 years. The municipalities, like your metros, the bigger 50 municipalities in the country, started a process when generally recognized accounting practices were there, but we realized that there were some issues that had to be dealt with given the historical context of integration of financial systems and all those different issues. At the time, it was GEMAP that was introduced. GRAP is the final state that we want to get into. GEMAP was introduced when we were still doing the pilot. It was still being done. It is not one superseding the other. The final state is the GRAP. So what is happening is we still, as international practices change, there will always be something because it's based on international accounting practices. As things change, we'll always get to a point where we need to bring what we need to worry about is how it is communicated to municipalities so that it is not communicated in the year when the implementation is supposed to happen. And those are some of the things that we are working with National Treasury.
Just a quick one, Dorman. I think the Auditor General explains it as what he calls, he uses a phrase, there's a continual raising of the bar. And so that the change relates to that in their own, how they assess what's happening. So they introduce stuff that ought to be coming, judging the performance of municipalities and so on. I thought that that's the point that you're making when you say sequencing, that raising of the bar on a regular basis. As new things develop, new approaches, they introduce them. Okay.
The final comment here is around, and again, I hope I'll capture this properly in the context that it was asked, around the fiscal capacity of municipalities, their ability to recruit, and whether MSIG was adequate in any way to support this. Now, we had at one point most of our grants, even provincial grants, where there was what was called a discretionary portion, which could be used for things like this. It was a flexible portion within the grant that will allow us, even in detail here at the time, we were saying that it would assist where there are recovery plans in municipalities to do that. That was stopped by the Treasury. We are still trying to get it back. That was stopped, but currently the 200 million is obviously not adequate. Not only is it not adequate, it is also not intended to assist on issues of recruiting the requisite staff. I mean, most of the capacity, as the member correctly said, is not necessarily just about who you hire, more than also in certain instances being about whether you have the resources to attract that required skill. And we have found in a few cases that it is a case that they don't have the resources. And we are waiting in the 2007 financial year, we are waiting on a remuneration framework for local government. And that the remuneration framework is supposed to look into that and see whether from the center, we cannot attract through the institutional component of the equitable share some funding mechanism to address those challenges. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, thanks. Just on a point of process, I'm maybe just trying to assist all of us. I'm fairly convinced that all of the questions asked here will and should be addressed in a subsequent presentation. If in your view you want us to continue, clearly I think we can do that, but I'm also saying that we can ask the colleagues to deal with it at an appropriate time, but I'm just making a suggestion. Thanks.
Okay. The way you want us to go, that's fine by us. I think we are actually on time to take the next presentation on administration. No, Chief, we are skipping Chief. We are going to lunch. You started at 10 o'clock.
Sorry, Chair.
Where is the staff? Luele? Mm-hmm. Is there any other staff outside here? Sorry?
The assembly is outside the chief, but there's no chief.
Oh, okay, no tough luck. Okay.
I just wanted to address the question that was asked by the honourable member on the capital, the expected assets, you know, the reduction. This current financial year, we had to purchase a new satellite sort of tracking system for disaster management. That is one of the reasons why our sort of budget, our expenditure on capital assets will be high this year. And now it's reducing back to its baseline. It's not actually a reduction, except that this was a sort of a once-off major expenditure for our satellite tracking system. Disaster management center, what they want to do is they want to have a picture of where the disaster is before and then after. They can compare so that they can sort of make their own sort of reaction and plan. And then lastly, we are also moving to a new offices where we will have to sort of put in a telephone system and some new sort of computers, because we're using another office now. We are relocating to another office, some of our staff at the World Department.
Any other comments before we move to the next? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
stay to talk. Am I there?
Yes.
Good. Mr. Peter, can you hear me?
Good.
When I was greeting everybody, Chairperson, my presentation, I would request honorable members and my colleagues to concentrate on the screen more than on what is on the paper. Because this has got some few changes, but all the changes will be emailed to you for the last version of my presentation. This is program one. This is program one. Program one has got quite a number of areas, but the structure of my presentation will cover the purpose, the objectives, the sub-programs, and the purpose of the sub-programs, and achievements, the previous financial year, and the plan output for the following year, and then I will cover also the budget.
Sorry, Mr. Faber, I think our approach should be similar to last week. We must zero in on the key issues. Even as we understand you want to remind us about the purpose of the budget and so on, but the major focus should really be on the key issues that relate to the budget. That will give us a sense of the issue. But that's important because I think it will help us if we use our time that way.
I think I agree with you because most of the stuff I did say to you last week, you know. But I'm just going to run through to get to the core. Actually, the budget. If you don't mind, I will talk to this slide, but I will be very quick. I'm not going to cover the objective that is known, the sub-programs that is well known, the achievements of the previous year. I've done that. It's now, you know, the water under the bridge. I'm not going to waste time on that. It has been done successfully, as it is said here. Now, Mr. President, how am I going to spend the money that is given to me? I did also allude to that last time, and I think I explained it very clearly. Chairperson, I know your interest is always on that line. That is the staffing of the department. The post from post level 1 to post level 12 is started in 17. The post from, you know, at SMS level, the entire post of the entire department is 413, adding 317 together with 96. I will expect perhaps questions later on that slide. It's not a confusing slide, it's easy to read. It's on the side, you see, it's the female and the male within the department and the levels, and according to racial groups, African, colored, Asian, and white, numbers and percentage, and covering the organogram of the department. And how are we doing staffing the department? On the next slide is a summary of all that. The post category, the number of approved posts on the 1st of April 2006, it was 472, post filled 299, vacancies 73, as of 28th of February, number of approved posts 500, number of filled posts 400, number of vacancies 100. There are quite a number of changes. There are new posts that have been created. That's why it's not, there's a move. The representative profile on the SMS level compared with public sector targets as of 28th of February, Chairperson. According to the public service and GPL, the targets of 75% were higher than that with 11%. As far as women are concerned, the public service and GPS target is 50%, while it's 35%, while just less than 15%. The people with disabilities, we've got 2%, the position is not 0.5, and what we've got is, we are less at 1.5. The GPS is 75% as I've said, and then we're working towards getting more of the disabled people as well as women onto our cater field. Chairperson, that is the money that I've been given to spend. 207,208. 113,531. And it's divided into the ministry, the deputy minister, the ministry, management of the department, administration, human resource management, information and technology, internal communication, marketing, property management, government motor transport, and also supply chain management. The total of those sub-programs for this financial year is 113.531. Chairperson, why is the money, why is the 19.6 increase? Because of the management and the building up of the DT post, corporate services, because we're working with service providers, the copiers, the cleaning services, security services, the property management that now has been transferred to all national departments, it's no longer with the Department of Public Works, so it forces us to budget more. And the increase in the outer years of the MTF is 3.4 and 5.3% respectively. I promise in this room that I will spend this money accordingly with all the efficiency and transparency given to me by this government. I thank you.
The Constitution provides that you must be must allow for others who do not stay there. Okay? Yeah, like us. We are there too, right? The donor. Can we spend a bit of time on this one, just briefly, and then move on to the next one? Peter? Before you do that, there's a question I asked earlier on about civil society engagement by the department that I would like to answer later on. I also would like to refer to the work that relates to the governance, the white paper, and planning related issues there. We would like to talk to time frames in which things should be happening. There's a big issue about planning in the country, and there are big questions around it, and I haven't heard time frames around it that I would like us to explore and talk about what we can do. And we have said as a committee that we would like to convene a meeting at which we get a debate and discussion on planning-related issues. We think that is pretty urgent and that needs to be attended to. I just wanted us to flag it, and please come back to those later on. Peter, you wanted to raise a question.
Thank you, sir. I was looking at slide 14, and the total approved posts versus the number of vacancies. And I'm concerned that, you were 472, now you're 500, and the vacancies have gone up pro rata from 73 to 100. And of the 100, 41 are senior management. Now, a question I wanted to ask, or senior and the middle management, now, the question I wanted to ask is, first of all, what is suffering in the department as a result of having 41 people for whom a position has been approved, but are not there to do whatever it is that you wanted them to do in the first place? What delivery, what outcome is now is being compromised by that? And secondly, how actively are you recruiting as a department to find those 41 people? I mean, I browsed through the newspapers, but I don't see that many adverts of DPLG hunting for these 41 people, so perhaps I'm missing them, they're there all the time. Or maybe you're head hunting, but what are you doing to find them?
And how long do you intend to fill them up? It's a more important one. Anybody else on this question, Paul?
This question?
No. Yours?
Yeah, no. I want to check if it's on slide 15. I'm not a gender activist, but I think it's very obvious here that something is very wrong. And you see the issues of gender so clear, but actually if not achieve somebody, must have the fire. Because it's not just the leading party's perspective, it's also government perspective about ensuring gender balance. And management level is a very important level of organization. And I think that by not achieving the required targets there, actually we're not doing only the message in favor, but even the country. I thought we should put that one particular issue on record that we are not satisfied about that.
I agree with you 100%, except your reference to your not being a gender activist. I think we must do some work with you. Somewhere I'll go and report you to the secretary. I think
That, I agree with that point. It's a very important, crucial one. We would like to know some practical steps that you're going to take about that, including the issue of disability. This issue I've had very complex explanations about people not applying and so on and so on, but there are organizations that themselves deal with people with disability that sometimes may not themselves have the reach that we would like them to have and so on, but we would like to hear from you what you're doing to meet those targets. I think they are quite serious. It's a way in which we need to be true to what we intended to do. In the year that we are looking at, how many people have left the department? I'd like to ask that. And any exit interviews, if any, and what are they bringing out if you have had those? What's the breakdown, men, women, and perhaps seniority? That's interesting. Any other questions?
I just want to know on the property management, what does that entail now? The full complement that you have to deal with on property management that was transferred from the Department of Public Works.
Any other questions?
Yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for this very well thought of question. I'll try and answer them as much as
possible. Sorry, man, just to add one. You referred in one of your slides to what you call an ICT forum. I'm interested in hearing what's happening there, what are you intending to do, within what time frames with issues of ICT in your work with municipalities. I thought that's a very critical issue, especially for as a beefing up system for IGR as well. Okay.
Thank you, Sir President. Let me start with the what suffering do you experience because of those posts? It's quite a very, very good question as to why you've got these vacancies, but what are you doing? And then what is the result of that to your staff? It's definitely it's long hours that people, you know, would be able to do the work with. If, for instance, you have to start at 8 o'clock and leave at 4:30, but you start at 7 o'clock and leave at half past 6, because there are few people to do that work, it has got a lot of suffering. However, from another angle, it helps, because you'll find that if people are understaffed, they know exactly what to do, then they can do the work in short hours, and they get so dedicated. In my own branch, I've got two major posts that I've advertised them. The other one, I've advertised for the third time. Now, the interviews now will be for the third time. I'm not getting the right person. I'm battling. But I end up doing that work myself. Now, you know, it helps me to know how to run my branch very well. I'm not saying it's a good thing to do, but it has caused a lot of suffering. How often do we advertise as much as possible, really, on a... you know, I don't know how much you know how the cost of those adverts in the newspaper. It's a very, very costly exercise. When somebody says, I've advertised this post twice, I don't smile to that, because it means it's costing us a lot of money. But you know, the way they mean that you can avoid by advertising for certain positions that's within government, you know, so that you don't go out. You use what you call DPSA, the Department of Provincial and the DPSA schedule, rather than going to the newspapers, because they are charging a lot of money. We do advertise really almost every weekend. How long do you take to fill up the post? The post from post 7-1 to post 7-12 is not that much of a problem. But I'm telling you, the senior management post, I've done some research. It can take you up to 3 to 4 months just to fill in one post. Because you must advertise the post for a certain period of time, you must set up the panel, get people ready, and do that, you know, and then after your interviews, send people for the competency test, wait for the results of the competency test. Once you've got the results of the competency test, then you have to communicate with the people, and then certain folks, they need cabinet approval, if go through the cabinet. Some people that you'll engage are people coming from other countries, or people with qualifications from other countries. You must take that to SACA, you must pay 992 rand to speed it up. They always say 14 days, it goes beyond 14. You know, it's a very long process. And people, even in my department, my fellow colleagues here, they are not asking this question only for the members. Even I'm happy today to have an opportunity of explaining it, how long it is, and it's always time consuming. Gender balance. I am a gender activist, and I believe on gender very much. In my previous job, I had a gender as well as people with disabilities, so I'm very passionate with that. And you know, the best way of doing it, you can even tell other government departments, is to make sure that you link with provincial desks to say, I'm advertising this post, please send people. It's so difficult to get them, and I think my department is very passionate about that. We're doing our level best to make sure that we're filling posts you know, with all the groups of people. And then, okay, coming to the post, let me cover that post of the...
You see that question, your response there, is not adequate. How long has this been the case? I mean, like that gap, how long have you had this gap?
I don't want to lie. No. It's difficult for me to answer that question. I've only started with the department. I'm just a new boy on the block, doing all these changes. You know, even what you're seeing now that I'm with the department, it might change to be better. But to answer your question directly, I'm not sure. I cannot. Honestly, Honorable Chairperson, I don't know.
But you see the point. To get a more precise response, the history, the time frame, and so on. Yes.
Thanks. The question is on gender, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. Committee members will recall that for at least the past 3 years, we've done exceptionally well. You commended us consistently for the past 3 years, because we achieved the gender targets beyond what the DPSA had set. But last year, the targets were raised from 35 to 50. We're taking a similar approach with the local government on the 50-50 approach. So all of us had to start from a baseline of 35 that we had achieved at the time. So we are working towards 50% now. But then there's a number of female senior managers who left the department. And the approach is that where we lose female senior managers in positions, we attempt to replace them with the same gender. And some of the posts that my colleagues referred to as being vacant, and we're in the process of filling them, are those that we have targeted for the same purpose. So we are very confident that when we come back next year, there will be some progress. But we have to move on from a baseline, and I think the situation is the same throughout the other government departments.
Any other comments? Okay, go ahead.
How many people have left the department? I've got the figures right in front of me, the resignations that we've got. As it has been mentioned, you know, there are two senior people that have left. I'll quickly ask everyone just to add all these numbers for me. I'm not a mathematician. It's called upper delegation. And then the exit interviews. You know, Pretoria is like the center of Johannesburg, where you've got Absa, First National Bank, Nedco, Standard Bank in one place. You see this particular Joe wearing a blue uniform working for Standard Bank. Next month, red, he works for Absa. The other month, green, he works for Nedco. People are just moving from one department to another. Immediately, a post is advertised. If the person is serving on post level 7, that post is post level 8. You'll be surprised. They apply. They leave. But I always say, we don't lose judges going to other government departments. The equity interviews that you will hold is that people are saying, they are offering me 200 rand more than what they are offering me. And then, and you get sick and tired of counter offering all the time. You say, as long as we do to another government department, that is fine. But I'm just not sure with our department, there's no reason for leaving. It's just to go for higher positions. And you can't stop them. I've got a unit called UWL. I've got the results of it. I've done it. My latest was in December. I did it right in divorce. I was also equally concerned as to why, you know. But people are not, they're not living for anything, you know, like changing of residence and all that. It's just because this post in the same department, I mean, one government department in Pretoria is offering this, having this post at level 8. They just go. Because it is within the same rank. Thanks, Eva. We've got 44 people who have resigned, 15 from the SMS, 29 below SMS. Now, an interesting figure before we talk about that. We've got 27 people, promotions and transfers from DPLG to other departments. There's 27 of them. So, you know, it shows the upward mobility because they are moving because of better service. Someone. It is worrying us. It's cause for concern, but we cannot always counter offer people who have to let them go.
Assume that a retention strategy can only include counter offering. I don't know what else it must include. If it's more exciting and so on, but there is not so big difference. People would stay. I'm just saying that we would imagine that some strategy would be. Go ahead,
just one follow up. I'm not 100% happy with the idea that the vacancies merely result in people working a bit harder, but there's no, otherwise there's nothing compromised in the sake of the government or the department's output. I mean, if that were the case, you could almost suggest, not quite perhaps it's sneaky, that the person not be quiet, because if as you say, everybody handles the job that is working in it an hour longer each day, but they can do the work, then it's a question of whether you really need that extra 100 posts. So my question, I think, still stands. Nearly a third of your senior management positions are vacant. Now, I would imagine there is something being compromised in your delivery as a department as a consequence of that. If the answer is, well, we're all able to cope, then I'd say you don't really have a problem in terms of vacancies. So I don't really find the answer. I mean, I would think, for example, are those 28 senior people, are they spread throughout all the departments equally, or is a particular section within a particular branch which is suffering? 20 of the 28 are in M&E, then obviously M&E can't function properly. Or it's just a little bit, a couple of people everywhere, and it's a non-issue, maybe.
Let's speculate, Peter, how much time for reflection is there if you work 11 hours at the immediate level? I guess that's an important question. I did also think that maybe, yeah, the impact needs to be a lot more objectively assessed and then happen. Of course, sometimes what Mr. Faber is referring to, it's also often a useful exercise to determine the usefulness of a thing or not. But the general approach is that we've identified it as a vacancy. It must be filled. It will fill up things and then split them in a number of ways and improve the quality of the work that gets done. So I guess you're right in saying we could get a better answer. Okay. Have you covered it?
No, I must cover. Honorable Mr. Domen.
Okay.
Previous, I think Mrs. Gaba might come in on to this. The properties were paid for by the Department of Public Works. But beginning of which year, sometime? Last year, departments, they pay for the properties now. So that's why now that money, we have to budget for that money in order for us to cover those costs. You see. And, you know, we've got three, in fact, more than three buildings that we're occupying now. So it's really costing us a lot. Maintenance is by Public Works. You know, it's minor maintenance that we're actually doing ourselves. The last one will be the ICT forums. We've established 8 now. We're only battling with KZN, as I said last week, but we are getting there. And then this ICT forums, we've got a target that says all municipalities will be linked, and then they must have their website. It's people think that it's a difficult thing. You know, they always put that IT is complicated before they can even start it, you know. But we are emphasizing that all municipalities must have their website so that, you know, if you need them, you can just go to the website. So these ICT forums are there now, district level, local municipality level. I'm personally happy with the progress now. But it's something that is very difficult, because we go to municipalities, we'll find that out of 10 people, there are only 3 people with computers. They have to run to the room with a computer. But, you know, we have to change people's thinking. But it's a good thing. There is progress at the moment. Thank you, Shepard.
What did you say about time frames, about that? Within what time frames do you want those things to be happening? You're saying there's progress. And you didn't answer the question on disability.
I think I did. It might have been problem of semantics. Personally, I've done this. Writing to all the provincial offices, sensitizing them about the posts that have been advertised, that they must look on them because we're looking for people. Because I happen to know these provincial offices, so that they can encourage their people to apply for this post. Because it's specifically disability. I used to get in very much close with the DPSA, Disability Organization, working with people on that for, but I've lost touch with them, but I'm just working with the provincial office to cover that. Because it's a great concern. The target for the ICT forums, I don't want to come back, but when I come back to this room next year, I can assure you about 90%. Would be done if not 100. Thank you, Chairperson. I've got now a full staff complement now from my ICT unit, so the work can just flow.
And the money for
it. Thank you, Chairperson. The branch is part of Program 1. Not a program on its own. We didn't cover the budget in the presentation of the branch, because that was covered in the presentation of the CFO. I'll just refer to some of the areas that will be areas of focus money-wise in the last slide as I proceed. If I can just direct members to slide 4 on the strategic objectives. That's just a reminder that our work is informed by the 2 strategic objectives, which is monitor performance, evaluate service delivery, and community development. And then it links to the work that my previous colleagues reported on with regard to strengthening the organizational capacity and capability of the organization. Most of the high-level reflection issues were covered last week. I'll just emphasize a few of those issues. We reported that we developed the 3-year performance plan in line with Treasury regulations and requirements, and that was the plan that informed the work of the department throughout branches for the year. We also developed the annual report for the 2005-06, and this was submitted on time. The feedback that we received here, Chairperson, is that it was the best annual report when comparing it to the annual reports that we've done in the previous years. And the reason for that is that a lot of emphasis was placed on improving the content and the overall presentation of this report. We were able to monitor our organizational performance through the consistent convening of the quarterly review meeting, and that was just implementing the business plans. The other planning issue that we improved last year was to try and align the different planning documents in the department. I reported to the members last week that we have a 5-year strategic plan. There's a 5-year local government strategic agenda and the medium-term performance plan. We worked through all these strategic documents with the purpose of aligning and ensuring synergies between these. With regard to monitoring and reporting, we've conducted a readiness assessment in the provincial departments of local government last year, and the purpose for this was just to assess the capacity level with regard to undertaking monitoring work in provinces. And following this assessment, we then convened a national M&E workshop with all MNE practitioners from provinces and from sector departments nationally. The purpose of this was to try and standardize the processes and approaches with regard to work, and we used the local government strategic agenda as a guiding document with regard to that. And then since then, 6 provinces have been able to establish the MNE forums. We reported again last week that we not approaching the establishment of these forums as a standalone committee. They work within the existing IGR fora in different provinces, and the 3 remaining provinces are, and the work is underway. Chair Sutton, I deliberately didn't bring the names because I thought this is a public meeting, but I didn't bring that.
The monitoring and evaluation.
Okay.
Yes, just tell us which one
there. Okay, I'll tell you when I go back to my notes.
Okay.
Okay. We also developed an integrated M&E framework, and we call it a draft at the time because work was still underway towards confirming the monitoring and evaluation imperatives that are necessary for us to finally develop a framework and work towards developing a system. And flowing from that, we are able to come up with templates that assist us with reporting regarding the local government strategic agenda. That enabled us to, and provinces to report, and we are able to produce a consolidated report that was presented to Cabinet Lekota in January. Work that we have started towards the development of a framework is that we've conducted business process mapping of all the M&E work in the department. We've done the same with sector departments at national level. And the key deliverable of this was that we were trying to understand the different processes and the fields where the different M&E systems will interface. And one of the things that came from that process was that we were able to develop a compendium of indicators using the 3 strategic documents that are referred to in the previous slide. We've also done a lot of M&E work for Project Consolidate, and to that effect, we've been able to develop, again, a set of indicators and tools here. We've developed a system to monitor the Izinvizo. I think this issue was discussed at length, again, last week. Members trying to understand what the system does. With regard to good governance and compliance, the committee members will recall that we struggled a lot with understanding audit work in the department in the past, and the reason for that was that we didn't have a well-staffed unit. We've been able to recruit and staff the unit appropriately. A number of audit plans have been developed. There is still a weakness with regard to understanding of audit work, not by the unit, but by managers in the department, and we are working closely. One of the deliverables for the next financial year, which I referred to last week, was that there's going to be a capacity building drive of capacitating internal managers with regard to their understanding of internal audit work. But there's an appreciation of our work, particularly by National Treasury and the AG's office, and they refer. They utilize us as a resource to assist other national departments in establishing the unit, in developing their plans. Our audit committee meetings were held as planned. We've also developed a risk awareness program which was rolled out throughout the department last year. The other challenge that we faced last year was trying to standardize our approach to project management work, and for that we developed the framework which will be implemented this year, and also the cluster liaison strategy. The legal unit provided support, the legal support towards the realignment of the provincial boundaries. Elroy indicated the minister's role with regard to 2010, and in the absence of a dedicated person, we have one now. A number of colleagues in the department assisted to carry out this work, and the minister was supported in his capacity as a board member of LOC and the chairperson of the host cities. Oh dear. I'm sorry, Chairperson, this is not the correct presentation. I have listed two challenges that we experienced in this ending financial year. The one challenge was around the fragmented planning processes, and I think I've related some of the issues with regard to trying to align the different strategic documents. And the intervention that we have planned in the next financial year is just to standardize those processes by developing a planning model and cycles that will be used to inform our planning work. The other challenge was with regard to our own capacity on monitoring, reporting and evaluation work, and it's a capacity issue that cuts across the three spheres of government. That is why we decided on the establishment of this forum to ensure that the approach that we take nationally is shared with our sister departments provincially, but also sector departments that do work in local government. And to that effect, we have developed the compendium of indicators, as I indicated. The work that we are doing is intended to inform the development of a system for local government and to develop the regulations that will guide the work that is going to be carried out in local government level. That's all that I had to share. Thanks.
The branch police staff.
I thought members were still asking questions. Should I respond?
I could not miss your reference to my province and three others, the Free State and three others, on some matter. So I thought, why are these being transparently held and not the others? You know what I mean? So tell us those three that you didn't mention. We don't mind the six. We will know which ones are the six if you tell us the three that are not doing so well.
Okay, I'll tell you, Chairperson. I still have to get information from my bank.
Okay.
But with regard to Honorable Smith's question, we are in the process of staffing the branch. The member will recall that in my presentation last week, I indicated that the function currently cuts across the department. It sits in almost all the branches in the department. That's the way the M&A function was structured in the past. The role of the branch, as it is now, is to develop policies, to integrate systems, to standardize processes, and the actual unit that's doing this work only started in April last year. So we are still in the process of starting that. And the same will apply for the resource issue. We're working with the CFO office to ensure that the necessary resources are provided to carry out this work. The cluster liaison strategy, Chairperson, links to our work with regard to IGR. We've got a unit in the department that helps with providing corporate secretariat services to the PCC, to the MINMEC, and a number of IGR fora. And in doing that work, they developed a cluster liaison strategy that informs how they provide that secretariat, that corporate secretariat service, but also ensuring that there's proper coordination within the cluster work, because we are responsible for the GNA cluster as well. The GG is the co-chair of the GNA cluster. But just to standardize the processes and approach towards the work of the clusters, they develop the strategy. They shared it generally with other clusters as a model to be utilized.
GNA? What's that?
We are responsible for the governance and administration cluster.
Okay, yeah, that cluster, okay. Right, just follow up. What is the approved staff complement of this branch, and what is its current staff complement?
Chairperson, the approved staff complement is about 35. And then, just to remind you that the M&E branch is a mix of things. You remember I said that last week. It's a mix of the corporate planning unit, which is fully staffed. The internal audit and risk is fully staffed. The legal unit is fully staffed. Corporate secretariat is fully staffed. The weakest chief directorate is the one that does coordination around M&E work. Yeah. And currently, the staff complement there is 4 people. The approved structure is weak if you look at it. In the approved structure, we have 3, but because we are reviewing that approved structure, there's agreement that as and when we experience demand and need, we will submit proposal for the creation of more posts. So we are working on that.
Okay, I was about to ask about the legal support that you want to render them. The third, there is a legal unit that is fully staffed. So I would like to ask, what does this comprise of, the legal unit? And the aims of this department, what support do you want to give, not only to the department, or also to municipalities and so on? Just speak on that, please.
Thanks, Chair. By the grace of God, I brought my colleague from the legal unit with me. I'll ask him to respond to that question. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, basically the Chief Directorate comprises legal services, comprises of 2 directors. One is legal services and proper old legal support, as the committee members have come to know. The other director deals with contract management and due diligence. So it's not as if we have a big complement of people dedicated for legal support in itself. They're all lawyers, yes, but on contract management, the lawyers, they are only concentrating on the contract management and the due diligence. In that regard, I can also indicate that we've already extended our scope from an inward focus to an external focus. That particular director dealing with contract management and due diligence have, for example, assisted in the past financial year with the development of an early warning system for provincial local government departments to pick up on the performance reports that should come out of municipalities. So we've already rolled that out. Internally also, we've, for this year, planning for the forthcoming financial year, institutionalized compliance issues and items within the planning processes. So where a particular component is responsible for a particular compliance item, we've now endeavored to have that included in the business plan as a standing item. So currently it's a mix of internal focus and external focus as well. The external focus relates more to the other kind of support that we're providing as a result of the minister's position in various fora and things like that. The total staff complement is 5. 3 in the legal section, and only 1 person in the contract management and due diligence section. So that section, the approved policy is full, but it's not allowed for any further expansion in that regard.
Work, yes, you're referring to, especially the external one. One of the things we spoke about last week around compliance is that municipalities have to comply, for example, with the number of reporting requirements by a number of departments and so on. So it extends them quite significantly. So part of the question we were raising was relating to your mandate to promote integration and thereby minimize the administrative burden of municipalities. would there be any sense in seeing how there could be some coherent way that reduces the plethora of those things into perhaps fewer that can be used by a number of departments for assessments of sorts? Is there a possibility of that? That seems to be an issue that comes from municipalities themselves, when they say a lot of their time gets used in reporting to departments A to Z to Z and so on.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, yes, I think it's two things that flow from the overall work of the department to exactly address that challenge. First of all, we will have to have some kind of alignment in legislation, because in the past, those responsibilities arise from compliance issues in different pieces of legislation. There must be alignment in that regard. And I think, in my own mind at least, there is an expectation that the review of the white paper and of powers and functions will also start adding to that. Because if you've got the planning alignment of planning systems and planning instruments, your reporting out of that also tends to come in line as well. I can also add that in respect of the overall compliance, our component did provide a compliance planning matrix for global government that was then actually rolled out by the Project Consolidate team. So we have worked on an instrument to actually guide municipalities in aligning their compliance responsibilities as well.
One comment. I'm not sure how onerous the burden it is, but one of the things I think many of us at the side might appreciate is that as and when government, department produces documentation which is sent to municipalities instead of saying whatever they're doing, if we as members of the committee might have a copy, we think there's a very issue talking about. I mean, for me, for example, in my constituency work, to know what the timeline is for all those reporting requirements, very useful for me to know, okay, on this date, 1st of July is that, within 40 days I must do that, then they need a quarterly report is due then next quarterly report then. And then you have a year planner, you can see where all these things slot in. I would find it very, very useful. But I mean, that's just a kind of overview thing. But just generally speaking, maybe I should direct it more the other way, would be whether the sort of stuff that you produce, which you give to municipalities to facilitate their operations, whether we can't receive copies of those things as and when you produce them, just to increase our understanding of what's going on.
In fact, just from a reducing into practice what the reconstruction and development plan calls making it people-centered and people-driven, when you communicate that, you're saying to everybody else to demand explanations when those targets are not met, in a sense. So it's not just for MPs who do oversight to be able to ask questions proactively, for example, sometimes, and not just when they are not met, but what work is happening to meet the deadline proactively makes a huge difference to what happens. And also often the rest of the people in the organization don't know those deadlines, and so they couldn't contribute to their fulfillment. It does appear like it's an interesting one. Okay, let's move on to the next presentation.
Thanks, Chair Member.
You tell your strategy well so that the chief is present when you
speak. I've also been briefed by my chief about what the chief said at the last meeting. I'll try and deal with some of those issues. Chair, I'll get right into it. These first two tables are just a high-level overview. This one is performance in 2006-07, and this is what we plan to spend the budget on in the next financial year. But I'll go into this in a bit more detail through each of the programs, and what each of these slides will do is set out our basic thinking, if you like, and strategy over the 2 years. Looking at what we said we'd achieve last year and what we've done so far, what we plan to do this year, and what our targets are. Now, if you look at this chief directorate, which is Temba Forsey's chief directorate, the main areas of work here were to support the implementation of the intergovernmental relations legislation, which Parliament adopted in 2005, and a variety of instruments and toolkits guidelines, etc., have been developed in support of implementing the Act. As things stand at present, all of the operational machinery of the Act is in place. According to all the reports we've received, the MINMEC provincial forums as well as the district IGR forums are now all established. We've also made a concerted effort to support those institutions to find their footing through the IDP engagement process, which I'll talk to in a short while. So the previous year was really about developing all of these supporting toolkits, and we've by and large completed those. Our intention is to piggyback to some extent on Parliament's own celebration of 10 years of cooperative government, which I think there's a summit on cooperative government in May, and we are in discussion with the NTOP in particular about launching our toolkits as part of that summit, and we're also working with the NTOP in support of that process. What we aim to do in this area next year is now to begin to put a bit of reporting pressure on the system. You'll recall in the Act there is that provision which requires, which permits the minister to bring a public report on the state of cooperative government in the country. We're looking at 2008 as the first real report in this area. We've had a series of reports up to now, which have been more focused on status quo. We're now looking at taking the first public report under the Act to Parliament, etc., in 2008. We have in the bottom left-hand corner submitted a variety of reports on the implementation of the Act so far, including to MINMEC, PCC, and Cabinet, most recently in January 2007, which Alroy did report on in his introduction. We'll continue to do that routinely, delivering assessments of how well the Act is working in practice. On the right-hand side, then, we're going to continue over this period and probably for the foreseeable period to support the implementation of the Act. Our capacity is limited in the sense that we cannot support every district, but we are looking to put in place a variety of regulatory guidelines when necessary to make things simpler and easier. We also have undertaken capacity assessments of provincial departments of local government and offices of the Premier with a view, amongst other things, to building up the province's roles in intergovernmental relations to administer the Act. So those programs will continue. And we can report, which I will do, some progress in intergovernment relations. I think our big challenge is to how do you monitor when you've achieved integration or better coordination. It's a wobbly thing to try and achieve. It's a woolly concept. What we're doing as part of these toolkits is to begin to start defining some indicators for measuring the content of intergovernmental relations as opposed to the procedural dimension of that. And that is something that no doubt we'll engage the committee on in the future. Our main focus in this chief directorate previously under, well, it's still under Mr. Patel. I think he's with us for a while longer. But he's been promoted, as you know, to DDG. But our main focus in this area of work was really on two main things, and it consumed an enormous amount of energy in the branch over the last 2 years. The one was to throw our full weight as an organization into an intergovernmental process, which we mobilized in support of the municipal IDP process. The other is to deal with outstanding issues and also lessons arising from the development planning work that we've been doing, both with IDP but also with the presidency in terms of aligning national, provincial, and local planning, to look at what policy refinements are required, both in terms of the municipal legislation and perhaps in terms of other legislation. So turning to the target for last year, it was really to review all of the metro and district IDPs as part of this intergovernmental engagement process. And to do that, what we did was at an intergovernmental level, working with the provinces, organized local governments, other national departments, in fact 17 odd national departments. We developed what we call the credibility framework, and the credibility framework was a method of assessing the quality of IDPs. And we looked at the statutory responsibilities of municipalities in terms of IDPs. We looked at issues such as public participation. We looked at issues around establishment of ward committees, as well as the key targets for national policies that we've alluded to already. And through this IDP credibility framework, we then went into a set of systematic engagements over 2 years where we called the leadership of all municipalities at a district and metro level around the table with sector departments, which was then engaged through a panel, some including experts, which we recruited from elsewhere, others government officials, and we began to test some of the assumptions in these IDPs. Now, obviously, the coverage of that type of process is always going to be inadequate, and we can always improve, but we do think that there have been significant improvements in the municipal IDP process since we've introduced these 2 years of engagement, and I'll give you some of the indicators that we've used to measure that by. Amongst other things, there's a better common understanding of the credibility of municipal IDPs. Through the IDP credibility framework, we've seen provinces, for example, using those frameworks to develop their own IDP engagement processes, and there is some best practice emerging in provinces about how you can sustain that type of momentum. We've also seen, according to the adoption rates, which Alroy mentioned earlier, a significant improvement just in meeting the statutory timeline for adopting IDPs. Now, that's very significant because the IDP is tabled along with the budget, so it means that your municipality is also getting their budget in. According to all of our data, we're in the upper 90 percentile currently for adoption rates. So that's a pretty good first-past-the-post indicator, given that we've also had new leadership in municipalities. That is a significant development. But perhaps more importantly, also coming from the National Treasury's own Intergovernmental Fiscal Review, the most recent one prior to the last budget, they point out a virtual correspondence between the capital plans of municipalities and capital budgets. Now, we're not claiming a complete victory in this regard because the Treasury has its own programs of support. But we do think that the heightened emphasis on the IDP engagement process has at least contributed in some way to achieving a better integration of capital plans and budgets. And that was a core aspect of our credibility framework. We're also, in this phase, we're going to focus much of our attention in this period on public participation in the IDP process. And we're about to launch a nationwide campaign centered on enabling participation from within our communities in these IDP processes, making information about participation available. And that is a process that we'll be building out following the tracks that we followed in the past, running it as an intergovernmental cooperative government process. We've also constituted a permanent steering committee comprising national departments as well as provinces that does routine assessments of IDPs and forms a network, if you like, of IDP practitioners. When we talk about IDP, we simultaneously look at the IDP strategy. So these two go together. Our strategy is also further refined this year in the bottom right-hand corner in the sense that we've got a better sense of which municipalities are struggling with IDP still. And there we're going to have targeted deployments into these municipalities. We are using donor funds to recruit technical expertise as part of Project Consolidate, and we're going to deploy it to the region of 17 to 21 municipalities, including municipalities where we are piloting the National Spatial Development Perspective with the Presidency. Our policy work in this area is to build on practice and to begin to address some of the issues around aligning intergovernmental planning from a developmental point of view a little bit more effectively. I think we've seen that some of the planning instruments are discretionary. There's a lot of sector regulation of local planning still. We want to move much more to spatially targeted planning. We believe that the history of the country being as unique as it is, the spatial distortions in our economy lend itself to not necessarily universal solutions at a spatial level, but spatially targeted solutions. And building on the lessons that we've derived from the ISRDP and URP programs, we're going to look at how we can specify outcomes a little bit more effectively in some of the legislation. Yusuf can also, I think, add on this, Chair. I'm sure you have a number of questions around planning, which I won't necessarily get to. But we are envisaging a complete relook at the current system and a refinement of that system based on practice. We also think that there's still a little bit too much discretion in terms of alignment with the IDP, and partly that's because the IDP is a spatial plan. PGDSs, for example, are largely informal instruments, the National Spatial Development Perspective and so on. We want to see greater directive value of those plans and a little bit more predictability in the system. And there is, this predictability is beginning to take shape in practice, and we think policy may want to take stock of that. So there's much else that's been done in the development planning unit. It's a very busy unit. These were the main areas that we identified in the estimates of expenditure. Our annual report will deal with other aspects in substantially more detail. In this area of work, international donor relations, it's a growing area of work for us, and in some ways we're still trying to come to terms with exactly what our responsibilities are in terms of supporting South Africa's foreign policy. What we've seen is that increasingly within the region where there are issues of binational commissions, etc., that arise, questions of governance and local governance and intergovernmental relations, decentralization in particular, come to the fore. And by and large, those always hit our desk in one way or another. On average, we assist or receive requests for assistance from 2 countries a month. And these are countries within the region, countries overseas, many of them are requesting us to support a visit to this country, etc. It's a growing area of work for us. But in essence, three main things which the Chief Director is currently responsible for. The one is, for some time now we've been working on establishing a local government desk in SADC. It wasn't there before. It's something which has now been adopted in principle by the SADC Council. And we've been putting together, working with the countries in the region at a very senior level, we've been putting together the plan for that desk, as well as what we're calling a charter of local government on local government for the region. So we're looking at ways in which local governance can feature prominently within regional governance issues. It's a complex set of circumstances because countries are in different positions, but we are at the point where we're about to conclude the final details of launching that desk, and hopefully within the next few months we'll be able to report that. Secondly, we're also supporting the binational commission with the Democratic Republic of Congo, and I think we all know that there have been recent elections there. Part of our task is to assist the government to develop what is called an organic law on decentralization. Much of our work here is really according to time frames that are beyond our control, in the sense that we're working in support of another government. But we are hoping that, as things stand, that legislation will go to the Parliament in the DRC around 2007. And this is likely to be a long-term investment from our point of view. It's not something that we've necessarily adequately prepared ourselves or budgeted for. It's something that we're still trying to adjust to in terms of our own planning and operations. But it's certainly a key area of priority for us. The assistance we provide is by and large in the way of technical support and advice and knowledge sharing, and we will be establishing a relatively permanent presence in the DRC in support of that binational commission. The third main area of this unit is to coordinate our overall donor spending. We have a number of donor programs which are invested either in the department or in local government generally. This unit has developed a set of standard operating procedures just to look at transparency and better management of donor funds. It works quite closely with the National Treasury's own unit on foreign direct investment, and there is some suggestion that the work that it's done to develop standard operating procedures can be extended at the intergovernmental level to look at the coordination of donor funding within the 3-sphere system, and that is something that we'll probably be looking at over the next few years. But we did manage to increase our net donor value over the time. We've had systematic engagements with donors around the 5-year strategic agenda for local government. We have routine donor forums, etc., all with the aim of ensuring that we are effectively utilizing donor monies in the most strategic way possible. In addition to this, the unit is also looking at a strategy for municipal and provincial international relations. There are obviously a variety of trips that take place overseas. There is a policy framework that was adopted by Cabinet around about 99 or 2000. And we have put in place, the most recently at the level of the local government, MINLEC, a draft document which we are hoping to work up into some kind of policy framework on municipal and international relations going forward. Local economic development is a unit, it's a function, but it's under the development planning unit currently. It doesn't have its own chief director as such. Our main focus in the year past was to develop a local economic development framework to take stock of where we are, what local economic development means, and to put out a national understanding. It's not a policy document, it's not legislation, it's not a regulation. It's a first step attempt to try and bring all of our understandings around local economic development together in a national compendium. We developed this through the economic cluster. We launched it at a national conference, which I'm hoping we invited members of the portfolio committee to. I think we may have invited the chair. So launching that was a necessary first step. In parallel with that, we've been working in support of the growth and development summits, which have been held at district and metro level with the TGI and other partners. We developed guidelines for those growth and development summits. The majority of them, we understand, will be complete. Well, all of them will be completed by March in 2007. That will then provide us with an opportunity to do a bit more of a thorough analysis of economic opportunities emerging within the district and metro level and to build that into our local economic development framework going forward. On the other hand, the other aspect of our strategy has been to directly support municipalities that need it most. I referred already to the IDP engagement process, which looked also at LED work, and we have now identified within the grouping of Project Consolidate and other municipalities, are those areas where we will be deploying expertise, again drawing on the resources where we can of the donor community, to ensure that we've got realistic local economic development plans in our municipalities. In the traditional leadership and institutions chief directorate, which is headed by Professor Sobachle, our main focus for some time, as you'll be aware, was on finalizing the policy framework for the institution of traditional leadership in the form of the Act. And alongside the Act, the various pieces of provincial legislation which needed to be enacted, as well as the reconstitution of traditional councils in our provinces which have the institution. In addition to these, two of our provinces with boundary changes have now also had the privilege of inheriting the institution, and we are working in support of those provinces to develop legislation and to support them to develop legislation where necessary. Our major focus now going forward is what we have called with the National Alliance of Traditional Leaders a national program of support for the institution of traditional leaders. Essentially what this program will do, and I understand that the portfolio committee has requested a specific presentation on this program, which I'm sure we'd be happy to do. It's something we're still working on. We've been developing it with the National House. We took a preliminary program to Cabinet in November last year. Cabinet endorsed the program. And essentially, similarly to our 5-year program for local government, this will be a comprehensive support program for the institution, looking at all the dimensions, including the establishment of the different structures and institutions, guiding their relationship with local government structures, including ward committees and municipal councils, providing capacity building programs for all the aspects of the institution, and looking at a variety of other issues affecting the institution, including the role of the institution broadly in local economic development and matters related to development. A key aspect for us in this next phase, in the next few months, is to finalize this national program of support through our own intergovernmental processes, to resubmit it to Cabinet, to complete the assignment of functions to the institution. As members will be aware, sections 19 and 20 of the Act, proper, I hope I'm quoting them correctly, they make provision for departments to assign functional responsibilities to institutions, and we are convening interdepartmental processes at a very senior level to ensure that those matters are dealt with effectively. And all of this is part of our national program of support, so it's a comprehensive support package for the institution. This then is the budget for 2007 to the medium term. The adjusted appropriation is also indicated in the left-hand column. I'll just give one or two explanations about that. By and large, the budget is fairly stable but growing. The 36 million in the adjusted appropriation for 2006-07, you'll see, was a significant increase in particular to the International Donor Relations Unit. We try to use the adjustment budget to accommodate the responsibilities in respect of TADC and the DRC. It's an enormously complex environment to work with in budgetary terms because it crosses borders and so on. And that explains the increase in the baseline on the adjusted appropriation. But the budget for the current financial year then is in the region of 30 million. It's not a decreasing budget, in other words, that's what I'm explaining, because of the adjusted appropriation. The branch is by and large at full strength. We've lost Yusuf, so if you know of any good people who can take over from him, I think we he's been booted upstairs. He's been promoted to DDG. I think Aure did announce that. So Yusuf will be our one vacancy at SMS level in the next while. But we have, as things stand, we have 17 SMS, 13 directorates, which are at full strength, 4 chief directorates at full strength, in the region of about 150 people altogether in the branch. It's a fairly sizable branch. And except for small positions here and there, admin clerks, assistant directors, and so on, we're probably at full strength or quite close to it. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Derek.
Members,
questions?
Quickly?
Yeah.
For about 10 minutes?
Before we go for lunch, yes, Peter. Yeah, Chair, very quickly. On the development planning side, when we have the strategic workshop, I think it is the credibility of the IDP process, the framework, etc. When we have the strategic planning workshop, I don't have the document here, but in the presentation, I think it was the old presentation, in the beginning, three provinces failed to submit at all the data required for you and the department to be able to itemize those which were credible and those which were not. Is that because they failed to submit it, or because it's not there, or they didn't do it, or what? I'm not sure I understand. And then, you know, I suppose it is an improvement to say you have a 98% compliance is good going. But the other 2%, are they 2% who've never ever done an IDP, or they're simply people who maybe are late this year, and then a month later they'd be included, or they've just never ever done them in the last 7 years? The improvement from 10% to 27% is actually not bad, but 27% is still a very low figure. Or credibility. Considering we started this process in the year 2000, we're looking at 7 years to get less than a third of credible. Do you anticipate that 27% rising quite significantly, quite rapidly? Then, Chair, this DRC support, the legislation, this is quite interesting. I mean, I see the budget is quite large for this sort of support program, which calls off this year. But the actual legislation that was submitted to their parliament, to what extent does it mirror what we do here? It was that a sort of omnibus bill which included a whole range of things in one package, or what was it? And how would your department support the process as it goes through their parliament? Because here, when you support a bill here, you have a legal advisor on hand for the department, you have all sorts of people who love the thing who are on hand. How are you going to do that when it's going through the parliamentary process here? I mean, I can't see any of you guys speaking French particularly. I can't see how many French speakers in front of me, I don't know. And then very briefly, last, there was one more just appeared. Sure, I've dropped it, I can't find it.
Your social walk, you'll have very interesting French.
I think, Chair, I'll remember. With the Khoisan, sorry, Jack, was very quickly. What progress on the Khoisan as the traditional leadership story?
So thank you, Chair. I'll start with the question. I think I'm going to leave it. And deal with the question of the local economic development. I'm interested to those municipalities with project consolidation, as well as those with nodal points. Whether in the past years have we made any progress. And because I also noticed that you are talking about 59% growth and development that have been held, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm comfortable with what you said, that was wanted also a linkage between these LED and the IDPs and the GDPs. Then, secondly, on the traditional leadership and the institution issues, you say KZN, Kumalanga, Northwest local houses are established. Is there any budget for those? Are they operational, fully operational, in view of what you have just briefed us that you are still finalizing the national framework of support? And then, what is the strategy in respect of the others that have not yet established those local houses? Is there any budget? Bearing in mind that in terms of the Act 2004, these local houses should have existed some time ago. Then, the next one, in terms of the budget, actual budget for them, in the estimates for 2007, 2008, and 2009, in terms of budget, very many from the national, I know it's both national and provincial competence, this issue, from national, very form of support by way of budget. Bearing in mind that I've noticed the budget for traditional leadership institutions on that last slide. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Good responses.
We're representing the taxpayers and they want value for money. I always wonder about all these assistance that are given to municipalities. You can take, for example, the IDPs. What does provinces do and what do you do as a national department? Do you liaise with them? How do you avoid overlapping that you can really assist that we can get value for money? And then secondly, I just want to ask, in KwaZulu-Natal and the Northern Cape, quite a number of municipalities haven't delivered the skills plan last year. Do you give any assistance to such municipalities to comply with that very important function or reports that they have to draw up and that will guide them, you know, with the work that they be able to do with the skills available and that they're looking for?
Yeah, thank you very much. I realize here that we spend a lot of money on international relations and stuff, but I don't remember us engaging in a very thorough manner between the department and the portfolio commission, then, unless you are account foreign affairs or something like that. And also just to get what led to such a drop in that amount. Were we responsible for funding the entire election project of the DRC? So now that the election is gone, is it dropping? What is the reason for that? And also if you can just give us a better description of what is the sale that we are supporting the DRC with this decentralization. Are we writing the act for them, or are we making the whole shoes for them? What is it that we do?
Thanks, Jay. Can I just work backwards from the last question? The drop in the budget is just simply, it's not a drop in the budget. It just had an increased budget because of the adjustments budget for that one year. What we are doing in the DRC is we have, as part of the binational between the heads of government of the two countries, we have our own memorandum of understanding through our cluster. And part of our responsibilities agreed to between our minister and his counterpart was to provide technical assistance in relation to the drafting of this organic law of decentralization. We are not drafting that law. We are not taking it through Parliament. We assist with research. So, for example, one of the things that we did was to simply provide some technical input about what exactly is an organic law of decentralization. Now, it isn't a mirror in any way of the South African system. I think there was a question on that, because it's a French, previously French-based legal system. So it's quite a complex system in its own right. But alongside that, we're also supporting the officials that are our counterparts to begin to implement the constitution in their area, to establish their decentralized government. So you have provinces in the DRC, for example. In some cases, you don't have effective systems that need to be established. And we would work under the leadership of the counterpart department, supporting them where we can. But there's no monetary assistance in the sense that there's no money that we are paying them or anything of that kind. It's technical assistance, by and large. But it is quite a time-consuming and obviously quite a costly exercise, because it does involve a relatively permanent presence in the DRC. We can talk about it at greater length, I think, as things go. IDP assistance. The skills development plan was a specific aspect of the credibility framework. We did look at human resource development issues. But I think my colleagues in Project Consolidate would probably be in a better position to answer that question, because that's the capacity building side. The branch's scope of coverage is much more extensive, because it's dealing with the whole system of IDP planning, all 283 municipalities, within which we segment and focus hands-on support for those Project Consolidate municipalities. But it is an issue, and it is something that is receiving treatment as part of the overall five-year plan for Project Consolidate. The overlap with provinces, etc., well, as I said, we have been doing our own capacity assessments of provinces to perform these functions. The approach that we took was that we needed to work in a cooperative government relationship with provinces, without necessarily duplicating what provinces are doing, without trying to substitute for provinces. But in effect, what has happened over the last 2 years is that provinces will chair these panels and engagements. They'll run their own processes, sometimes request our support, but with the panel engagements, we co-chair with provinces. So we bring in the national dimension, the national momentum, national departments. Provinces bring in the provincial departments. Organized local government brings in local government, and then we work in a cooperative way. What we're moving towards now is, and as I said to you, we've tried to use this process to give a bit of a push to the intergovernmental machinery. We are now moving towards a situation where we want our intergovernmental structure to be much more the custodians of these IDP engagement processes. And that gives us some room just to move up a little bit as a national government department. But it's a relationship that works, by and large, quite cooperatively. Of course, it does have its problems from time to time. The budgets, the Prof, I don't know whether you want to deal with the budgets for the local houses and so on. Maybe we can come back to that. The strategy in respect of supporting local houses, we're going to support the establishment of all local houses. I don't know, Prof, whether you're in a position to answer those specific questions on those provinces. You may have more current information. But as part of our program of support, it includes the establishment of all local houses. So it would be those provinces in addition to the ones that we've already mentioned. Those municipalities with nodal points, better linkage, I think that comment is right. I can't give you specific data on which municipalities. Perhaps we can do that. We do have that data, but we didn't bring it with us. By and large, our strategy is always when we do these hands-on support programs, we look at the nodes and we look at the project consolidated municipalities. And you'll find a correspondence when we talk about municipalities that are up at less capacitated than others. It's generally the same municipalities. So we work within fairly common frameworks. Just the final few questions on the credibility issues. In fact, it's about a third either way. We've got a fairly exacting standard. We've got high, medium, and low. But if you take the sort of high and medium at the top end, then it's more or less over 50% of IDPs are by and large credible. But what we wanted to do to get a sense of with the credibility framework was, to what extent are IDPs talking to national provincial priorities? To what extent are we able to assess how participatory they are and so on? And I mean, really, we can't validate for every municipality, you know, how accurate that information is. But we weren't solely reliant on the provinces' information. That was information provided by provinces. And the report you're referring to is a report that was provided to the implementation of the 5-year strategic agenda, which I already referred to. We have our own processes. And part of those processes is to work as a permanent steering committee to look at issues of the credibility of IDPs. So we tend to think that the figures are probably slightly higher than what provinces actually reported. But certainly, I mean, going forward, where we want to be is to have much more accurate and verifiable data. It is an issue. It's something that we've identified in our 5-year strategic agenda, and that is where spheres of government are accountable and responsible for delivery and for reporting. We rely on information. So we're trying to get those systems right with TUMI's branch and so on. She spoke about the M&E framework. That's really, I think, the answer, Chair. We can pick up other issues.
Okay. I'm going to suggest we break for lunch. Prof, you'll be the first one to come back. We must deal with this issue of traditional leaders properly. I'm not going to be allowed to get away with it. You see, sitting next to me.
I wanted to share quickly the three provinces. Quickly. It's Northwest, Eastern Cape, and Northern Cape.
Chair, where is lunch?
I'm trying to suggest we make it so that we are back here on time. Let's spend time more eating than are you okay?
Was the type of this one because you have given me mine, eh? I don't know why it's getting behind, because they will get lots of books, because I'm going to get this, I'm going to lose this one.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, that's
great.
As well as
the Eastern Cape. The legislation with respect to the two provinces, the Free State and the Limpopo, is with now the Bordisha. Last week we were in the Eastern Cape, in keeping with the ongoing support that National Department has given, and we were assured that by the end of this year, also the Eastern Cape province will have its legislation on the local house spreading. With respect to the support that we give to the province, and also in response to the query from Kosno Gonyana that these houses should belong, there have been challenges from the provinces. You recall that there has to be a reconstitution of traditional council. And even with that respect, you will have certain modalities, for instance, that there must be a senior traditional leader available. There must be a well-defined area of jurisdiction. These are the challenges that we're confronting some of the problems, especially the Eastern Cape. Also in addition that Eastern Cape, especially the Siskai area, does not have recognized headmen. Also does have traditional authorities which are now led by headmen. And the legislation demands that these traditional, reconstituted traditional councils must be led by senior traditional leaders, not headmen. And so to that effect, DPLG has given them a formula to respond to that. As much as we speak, as I said last week, we also help them by giving them the regulations that must help them in conducting elections for traditional council as well as for the local houses. Hence now, we have been assured by the remaining provinces that it is by September they will. We got to know, for example, in the Eastern Cape, that out of 200-something traditional councils, at least over 100, 120 to be exact, traditional councils have been reconstituted. And so there is a movement, and the National Department, on an ongoing basis, is helping them to expedite this. Because without this, the partnerships that the legislation talks about between traditional leaders, traditional councils, and municipalities cannot take place. But I'm glad to announce to this House that with our help, working together with our provincial counterparts, we are going to meet the target at least by the end of this year. All provinces will have established local houses. All of them will have reconstituted traditional councils. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Let's go to the next presentation. We are
running out of time. Yeah. As they are, I don't think I'll resume my follow-up so that you can also respond. It's just a concern, Chair, honorable members, and thank you very much, Professor, for that information. But I think perhaps I'm not understood. That's why I want to make a statement so that at least the department can actually consider these things. The reason for my question about the institution of traditional leadership is because we realize as a country that we do have two systems of governance that not necessarily the same. That's why when you talk about LED, when you talk about IDP and things like that, and then you seem to concentrate on one system and then not consider that is a concern to me. I just want to make that point very clear. In other words, when Mandela actually constituted the National House in 1997, I remember, there was a clear indication that for the first time we'll be having a chief directorate
so that we can graduate towards full affairs department, so that we can focus on these issues, traditional leadership and rural governance, because we're fearing that the urban system of local government, which was well established, is going to continue to flourish at the expense of the traditional communities. That's the point I was making. And then, that's why the question of budget, it is very clear to me. If there's no budget for this institution, again, for this financial year, then they won't exist. And the risk that we're creating, that imbalance. Remember the Abadid has actually entrenched that imbalance, that now there will be a tension, because there has been a tension which has affected our delivery goals, you see, because we needed that cooperative system of governance so that we can be able to deliver to the poor of the poor in rural areas. I just want to make that bold statement, Chair, so that at least I'm understood when I'm posing these questions. I'm not saying we must favor this the institution over and above the other forms of governance. We must massage this system such that we'll be able to deliver to the poorest of the poor, so that at least this influx to the slums and everything from our areas is stopped, and so that at least those people also receive the better life they deserve. That was the point I'm making. But thank you very much. I think we'll follow up tomorrow again, but the National House is actually making its own presentation. But I feel that for the department, because I know the department has done a good thing, it monitored the draft legislation throughout. I know for the fact. So in terms of implementation of those provincial legislation, in my respectful submission, the department should do exactly what they are continuing to do, as Professor Sobhase is saying. That we're going around, make sure that we don't treat this problem better than the other one. Because if we do that, then we'll have a problem. Thank you, sir.
Okay, let's move to the thank you very much. Next one, Andrea.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. I'll be reporting on the urban and rural development branch. Go straight to the core functions of the branch, which is really around coordination and integration work between the agencies of government. And then the second core piece of work is around monitoring, valuation, and reporting. When I talk about the budget right towards the end, I'll give some indication of the staffing levels and the resources that we have available. There are, in terms of our coordination integration work, there are three strategies or approaches that we use, and the next three slides talk about, it's a slide about each of them. Firstly, we work on guidelines, toolkits, and frameworks to try and structure more the coordination between the different stakeholders. And secondly, we work with sector departments at national and provincial level and help them to improve the way they plan and budget for the nodes. And then thirdly, we do a lot of work with external stakeholders, donors, and the private sector to lobby their support for the nodes. So firstly, around the frameworks and toolkits and other work that we do, we've held induction workshops for new councillors in a range of the nodes, and they are listed there. In this month of March, they are continuing in nodes such as Halahadi. These induction workshops are really a briefing session of new councillors in the nodes to orientate them about the roles and responsibilities in the ISRDP and the URP. We've worked on guidelines for sector department participation in the nodes. These guidelines are mainly geared towards national sector departments to help them to budget and plan better for the nodes. And maybe just to add there that if we are asked if all the guidelines and toolkits and work with sector departments have brought any results, we can pull out one specific, I think, best practice in the case of DEET, environment and tourism, where they have really put practical systems in place to provide support to the nodes. They are able to provide a strategic plan specifically for the ISRDP URP, which is a part of their bigger departmental plan. They are able to provide an MTF budget, a forward-looking budget for what they're going to be doing in the ISRDP and URP. and they have backed that up in the last year by employing specific support people for each and every one of the nodes. So the National Department of Environment Tourism have now a person belonging to the National Department who sits in each of the nodes, and that is the link person between the National Department and the nodes to help them to provide better support. So that is really the model that we have been trying to sell to many of the National Departments. We've also done work on the implementation framework for the Urban Renewal Program, and now for the first time I think we've documented what the Urban Renewal Program is trying to do, and we've tried to provide some clarity on the approaches that you need to follow to drive township renewal, integrated township renewal projects, and that's in the implementation framework. We've also developed the toolkit for nodal managers. This toolkit provides management tips and tools for municipal officials who find themselves in a position where they are driving integrated township renewal programs and where they are relying on the rest of government to provide support, but they are not necessarily in a position to drive the program on their own. So this program provides guidance on how to do that and the systems that can be put in place. And this is really our contribution to start rolling out the idea of the urban renewal approach. And from the feedback that we are getting, it's already being used by some of the provinces who are starting to roll out and declare new nodes as provincial nodes. We've provided technical support to the rural nodes through the IDT. As members might remember, the Independent Development Trust is an agency that is mandated to provide support to the IDP, and they have on the ground support people in each of the rural nodes. We also provide LED expertise, in this case to Khalashewe. The practice of providing specific expertise to the nodes are really limited by our limited resources. We have been set up to mainly perform a coordination function, and where we are able to, we try to recruit specific expertise, in this case in Khalashewe, where we are able to do that. And a little bit later on I will talk about how we are using this approach of being able to deploy hands-on support, and we've now procured support from an international donor agency where we can do this in a more blanket approach and not in an ad hoc approach. The work that we've been doing with sector departments and with provinces, in the last year we've worked quite intensively with specifically social development, health and SATs. And what this often means is working with these departments at a provincial level where they call their stakeholders together and try and, especially in the case of SAPS, call the policing community together and brief them about the URCIFDP, their roles and responsibilities, and help them to do forward planning and forward budgeting for the specific nodes in that area. The SAPS workshops has happened virtually in all the provinces now as we are sitting today. The policing community are having workshops in Gauteng province, where they are briefing about the URP and the IFRDP. Some outcomes, specific outcomes of the support of sector departments. Of course, there are comprehensive reports if members ever would like to look at them. In June, July, we prepare comprehensive reports to Cabinet on outcomes and outputs in each of the service delivery areas. I've just extracted a few of them to illustrate. In rural schools, 1.6 million students and 289,000 students in urban rural schools benefit from school nutrition programs. There's been a 13% increase in access to social grounds. We've had, I think, relatively good success working with the service delivery departments in terms of trying to get them to target their support to the nodes. 11 out of 13 rural nodes have MPCCs, the multipurpose community centres. And in terms of basic services, there's generally been an improvement in all I mentioned the four nodes here because of the four detailed impact assessments that we've done in Maluti Apafung, in Alphatonville, and then the two urban nodes were Alexandra and Motherwell. So for those four specific nodes in last year, we've done impact assessments where we are able to track the changes in service delivery from 2001 when the program was announced, and then now 2006. And in the case of Maluti Apafung, just as an example, there's been an 80% improvement in access to water. And in Alexandra, access to electricity improvement from 72% to 88% in 2005. But of course, to qualify that the baseline from which the rural nodes are improving are very low. So if you have an 80% improvement, it does not mean that there's 80% of people that have access to water. The third approach that we followed, I mentioned at the beginning, was working with external stakeholders to try and lobby their practical support in terms of capacity and finances to the nodes. We have, in the last year, established quite a good partnership with the Development Bank of South Africa, specifically around monitoring and valuation, drawing on their extensive expertise and resources in this field, knowledge management and monitoring valuation. And they are assisting us to do impact assessments and to roll out impact assessments. They're assisting us both with their technical expertise and in terms of funding this work. A new partnership that we have just set up is with the NDA to support the I-30P nodes. This partnership, which will really become operational this year, also two-pronged. On the one hand, support for us as DPLG to strengthen our information about activities in the I-30P nodes, but that is a small component. The major component of the support is actual project funding for community initiatives in the I-30P nodes. Then our partnership with the Business Trust, which I mentioned last week, to provide better economic intelligence about the nodes. At this stage, all 21 nodes except for Umzimkulu and Matatiel have been concluded. Those two outstanding nodes are being done at the moment. So we have detailed socioeconomic profiles of the nodes that we will use to improve the quality of plans, economic plans, local economic plans that are being developed on the one hand. On the other hand, we are planning in the next few months, by June, July, we have not finalized the date, for the minister to host a nodal economic development in Durban, where we would like to bring the private sector, municipalities and communities together to develop concrete action plans around these profiles that have been developed. And that we hope to happen in June and July. And then we will continue support specifically for Maruleng and Bushbuck Ridge, where the business plan is funding two support agencies in those two municipalities to work around agriculture and tourism, working with emerging enterprises and building tourism and agriculture enterprises specifically in Maruleng and Bushbuck Ridge. And then, as I mentioned earlier, we continue our support partnership with the IDT. At the moment, they are providing coordinators in all the nodes. In this year, we would like to use the resources of the IDT a lot more strategically and see if we can use them to deploy specific expertise around project management and local economic development to the I-30P nodes. That is the coordination, integration, and lobbying of support from external stakeholders work that we've been doing in the last year. The work that we've been doing around information management and knowledge management, we have conducted research to reconfirm the I-30P nodal status of municipalities that have been affected by the border realignment. That is specific to the Bosabela area, where the Bosabela node has been disbanded, and then also to the Alphatonville area. And we submitted a tablet memorandum to that effect just to confirm
that the areas that have previously been announced as nodes will retain their nodal status, even if provincial boundaries have changed. We hosted a communication conference for all nodal communicators together with the GCIS in this last financial year. And this was mainly geared towards trying to strengthen the communication function at nodal level. We have a newsletter for both of these programs that is produced twice a year, and we publish those newsletters as we set out. We produce a print of at least, I think, between 3,000 and 5,000 copies twice a year, and those newsletters are distributed quite widely to the nodes and to sector departments as well. We also supported political campaign visits in Khalashewe, Inc., Motherwell, Mdansani, Kalahari, and Owa Tambo. In this month of March, there will be extensive political champions visits in the Eastern Cape nodes, again, Owa Tambo, Kathani, and Alfred Nzor. And there's also another political champion visit planned for this month of March in Kalahari. And then we also managed to secure partnerships with the Department of Student Communication, who's now working with some of the rural nodes to help them to improve the development of their website. Some of the impact assessment or progress reporting work that we've done. We've completed, as I said earlier on, 2 urban and 2 rural impact assessments, and we presented the findings to Cabinet. This was really the first time that we tried the methodology, and we will now continue rolling out these impact assessments within the constraints of the funding that we have. We're not in a position to do 21 impact assessments in, so every year, every 6 months, we will try and do 2 or 4, as you will see. We've also presented detailed progress reports per node twice a year to Cabinet. Those are mostly output reports that talk about service delivery improvements, improvements in coordination in each of the nodes. The urban renewal and IFDP M&E framework was completed about a year ago, so at the moment we are working with provinces to roll out the use of that framework. We've worked in this last financial year with the Western Cape, the Northern Cape, and the Eastern Cape province in the operationalizing of the M&E framework. We also completed the first documenting of lessons learned in the urban renewal program, and that is now published and on our website. And we also updated our IFDP URP website and improved the quality of information, I think, substantially. But this is a project that we can do a lot more work on, and we are intending to spend quite a bit of resources on this website this year as well. For this coming financial year, Chairperson, we will continue our work with the business trust aimed at strengthening economic development in the nodes. I mentioned already earlier on the economic development in Daba that we are planning to have, where we want to bring the private sector, the nodes, and communities together to develop action plans on the profile. And we're also starting to work with some of the training institutions to look at entrepreneurial support programs for nodal communities. In the Western Cape specifically, we are just about to enter a partnership with one of the universities to provide specific targeted support programs for the urban and the rural nodes in the Western Cape, focusing on economic development. The agreement that we have just signed with the National Development Agency to target resources for the rural nodes, that we will operationalize this year. We had, as a first
I think Pat's been allocated 35 million rand for project support to the rural nodes, but I think that is a very small component of what the NDA is prepared to support us in the future. Then the third aspect is the Urban Renewal Program Technical Support Facility. I mentioned earlier on that on an ad hoc basis, when we have funding available, we have been trying to procure specific expertise and send them to some of the nodes that have had an extreme need for support, like LED project management or business planning. We now have secured donor funding to formalize that approach, and we have set up what we call a Urban Renewal Program National Technical Support Facility. And for the next 2 years, we will have the resources to deploy specific expertise to the nodes around the country when required, but with a specific emphasis on the Eastern Cape provincial office, where we will put full-time monitoring valuation experts in the Eastern Cape provincial office to assist the province to improve their support for urban development for the next 2 years. Also in this coming financial year, we will complete the ISRDP midterm review and the ISRDP lessons learned. Together with the IDT, we have commenced work on the ISRDP midterm review, and by the middle of this financial year, we should have a final product, which we would be able to share. And also by the middle of this financial year, we will be completed with the ISRDP lessons learned study, which we've also just commenced. We will continue work with the provinces on operationalizing the M&E framework. And we will once again this year endeavor to publish our rural focus and urban news newsletter. And we will also continue to support political champion visits to the nodes. Political champion visits to the nodes are activities that are not programmed by us. All the political champions that have been allocated to the nodes would decide on the program they wish to follow in the nodes, and we would then provide support to set up the event and to provide content and project visits for that event. Lastly, Chairperson, the budget for the MTS. I said I would just mention the staffing for the branch. We are a unit of about 13 posts, not warm bodies at the moment, but 13 posts. Of that, 10 are technical and management positions. And I think at the moment we have three of those positions are vacant. One of them, because we struggled for more than a year, we've done two unsuccessful recruitments to get an urban development specialist. They are not easy to find. We've done two unsuccessful recruitments. We have just now, for the third time, interviewed, and I think we are in a position to do a recommendation. So this position will be filled within the next month or two. And then the DDG position has been vacant and will also be filled within the next month or two. So it's a unit of about 13 members, maybe three positions that are vacant at the moment. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Quick one. The technical support to rural nodes provided through ICT. This technical support looks like you have delegated that to them. where does IDT report about this? Is it true, this is through you, to us, through the department, whatsoever? I'm mentioning this because I know that IDT sometimes, they do delegate those expertise to some other people. I would like further clarity there, Chair. Secondly, on the question of the rural nodes, 1.6 million students, the question of the co-op, particularly the report that we received through that the Eastern Cape system has collapsed, whether you can actually clarify us, you see, because there is also that issue of co-ops there that we're actually delivering in this. And I think lastly, Chair, to thank very much the department, I think the lamplight on URD and ISRDP. I'm impressed by that because a lot of money is towards the ISRDP, both the monitoring and evaluation, as opposed to monitoring and evaluation of urban renewal management.
The first
time you've been rural bias. Yeah, I now see rural bias, which I've been actually saying. I'm really impressed. Thank you.
One sort of characteristic one notices is, I'm not sure it applies to rural nodes as nodes, because I'm not quite sure, I understand the overlap. But one of the characteristics of many of the rural areas now is there seems to be far less viable subsistence agriculture than there was in the past. And if one drives, you drive to Trans Drive, for example, areas that were 20 years ago, 15 years ago, covered with crops, are empty fields. The same thing in Sankulu. We've got a number of places you drive around. Now, the question I'd ask, that surely, I mean, life starts with food security in many instances. And what role has this program played, positive role, should I say, in addressing this problem? So I would have thought if you're looking at an LED component, you know, nothing can be more basic than, say, growing food for yourself. But that doesn't seem to be happening.
Yes,
thank you, Chairperson. No, for me, it's just a comment. I just want to encourage the department, the program, the urban rural renewal program, also to target my area, which is Umzinga area, because we don't have anything from there. It is under Umzinga district municipality, because here it has been mentioned that there was only a workshop only, but there is nothing that has been mentioned that is happening there. And also what I want to know is that there in KwaZulu-Natal, there is a problem of the Ingonyama tract when it comes to the land. Because we have seen that there, and as Umzinga, we have a problem where the Department of Housing wants to build houses for the community there, but there is that Ingonyama tract that's not allowing the department to build houses for the people, because they are in rural areas. The only thing that they have is only PTOs that are there for the community. They don't have title deeds for them to own the land. So what is the urban renewal program doing on this issue of Ingonyama Trust? Thank you.
Okay. Dorman?
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to know, there was a possibility in the past that the number of nodes be expanded. What is the position on this? And actually, together with this, the future of what you are doing, if certain nodes, especially urban nodes, things are going well, shouldn't those nodes sort of operate under normal circumstances in the future? So yeah, how do you see what you're doing for the future? Or that you can take on new nodes, or that the way you operate and try to integrate, that was a big purpose of what you were doing becomes the norm for all the areas in the country. Then, of course, on the expenditure, this is what you expended on the notes, but there's of course no indication of what other departments have brought to the party, or can you put a figure to that? The position you've advertised for the urban developer, how was that advertised? As an equal opportunity? And lastly, are there any champions that you could name that doesn't do their duty that we can shame them?
You're looking for a job, though, man. They are rendering you jobless. You are really sticking it out. Okay, Jenny?
I'm also interested in the rural question. The subsistence farming seems to have disappeared in a sense, maybe because of growth of population, lack of rain, and that kind of a thing. But when I visit Limpopo, I don't think there's real dependence on subsistence farming. It seems to be wage labor that has taken over. There is some subsistence, but not something that you could rely for reproducing families. Now, I hear that in the past, even for the Afrikaner, there was heavy subsidy for Afrikaner farming to succeed. Are there schemes in the rural areas, either for commercial farming or for subsistence farming from the government that assist in agricultural activities that are really kind of government-driven? Because I'm saying even for Afrikaners, there were co-ops. Actually, Afrikaner farming succeeded because government, the apartheid government, subsidized it very heavily. So is there any support in that line for all this, so that land doesn't just lay barren? It can be utilized because there are some developmental schemes in the rural areas that support.
Any other question? Some of the questions that have been asked require a deeper briefing of the specifics inside the notes themselves. And I think that speaks to our earlier commitment to firstly get a more intense briefing. We mentioned Alexander specifically as one of those on our agenda, but I think we could go to two or three others as well to get more into details of what each of the various projects and programs are taking place in those areas. And I think we should sort of firm that up and agree maybe to go through Alexandra Kalahadi and Maludia Profum in the Free State, just to look at the details of some of what we are talking about. We could choose any other. I'm just citing those as examples. But in your responses to those questions, just be mindful that we are making that as one of the things we would want to do, create a detailed image from there. But the final question that is related to a detail really is the quality of the projects that are put in. I'm just wondering about the MPCCs. They might exist in all nodes. What's their state of functionality? Just a quick cursory response to that one. Okay. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chairperson. The Chief Director for the ISRDP is also here today. So I would ask her to respond to some of the questions as well. Maybe to start off, just to say that I do welcome the suggestion that we're going to have the opportunity to talk in detail about each of these nodes, because there is a significant amount of information. For example, how much are sector departments contributing. That information we do have available. It's not perfect, but we do have that available. And in a forum like this, it's very difficult to talk specifics. The first question was about the IDT and the technical support that they provide. The IDT does not, it's not an agency of the DPLG, so it's not an agency that reports the DPLG. My colleague will have to help me, but I think it's social development or public works, so it's an agency of the Department of Public Works. We have a memorandum of understanding with
an agency
the,
of government. Reports it to public works.
To public works. We have a memorandum of understanding with the IDT where they commit themselves to provide support to the ISWP. There is a technical steering committee between us and the IDT where we meet and we try to cooperatively plan for support to the nodes. That relationship, I think, can always be improved, and we work on that on a yearly basis to make sure that the support that the IDT provides to the nodes are complementary to the support that we as DPLG and the rest of government provide, especially now with the Project Consolidate initiative, where we're trying to be a bit more sophisticated about the type of people that we deploy to municipalities that are in need. We are also this year going to be looking at the IDT deployment to the nodes and looking those people are still appropriate, the skills that they have, and whether there are possibly other skills areas where the IDT can assist the rural nodes in terms of deployment. So it's a long-standing relationship that on a yearly basis we try to improve and get better results out of that relationship. The question about the number of nodes, are we planning to expand the nodes and what do we do with nodes that are doing well? Our minister calls it, I think, denoding. When are we going to denode the nodes? In the last, I think, 2 years ago, there was a discussion about the expanding of the nodes, and a decision was made that we would not do that, that this is a pilot program for 10 years where we try and get the whole of government to work in a more efficient and effective way towards supporting these specific areas. And the idea was that the lessons that we learn, the practices that we learn, and the systems we put in place, we should be able to use that in a blanket approach in the rest of the country. So it is still our approach not to declare new nodes. But I must say, at this stage, we don't have a strategy for denoding. If a place is doing well, how to not make it a node. To replicate it, yes. But replicating, we definitely encourage. And I think that is already happening in some of the provinces where the approach has been seen as useful. Provinces on their own and cities on their own are using this approach and declaring new areas where they're wanting to use the same approach. And for situations like that, we intend that our guidelines, our toolkits, and our frameworks are produced for those situations where new areas are going to be implemented using the same approach, that those things that we've developed, guidelines, toolkits, frameworks, where we've documented the good things and the bad things that we've learned, that those documents can be used in those new areas for replication. What are other departments contributing? I said earlier on, it's very difficult for us to give numbers. I can commit that when we do have detailed discussions about the specific nodes, we have information available, and it would be more meaningful, I think, if we have a lot more time to talk about that. But I do have to say that in the last 4 or 5 years of lobbying and working with sector departments, there have been significant responses from national sector departments. I mentioned earlier on our best practice case study in terms of DEET, where virtually 78% of their poverty relief funding is targeted exclusively at the urban and rural nodes. And we can give a few other examples as well. Of course, there are some departments that have not transformed sufficiently or as much as we would have liked them to transform. Who are the political chairmen that are not performing? I'll have to ask my DG to guide me. The urban renewal post that we advertised, it's the chief director for urban renewal program managers, so it's a position where we were looking for someone who has policy experience, because we are also expected to look at the lessons around urban development and inform policy, and then people who have experience in working with local government. That is the kind of criteria, and expecting someone to have 5 to 10 years of experience in working in urban development. As I said, for the first two recruitment processes, we didn't have success, but we are about...
We are volunteering one of our members. At the request of...
We do welcome hands-on support. There was a general question around agriculture and the apparent weakening of subsistence agriculture. I'm going to ask my colleague if she's able to respond, but I have to say honestly, as I'm sitting here, it's too detailed a question for me to respond to. In the profiles that we have done recently, the socioeconomic profiles, that is something that we have noted in the profiles, that there has been a weakening of subsistence agriculture, especially on areas where there's been recent land restitution. So in the case of Maruleng Bushbuck Ridge, the project that I referred to earlier on, where there are support agencies on the ground, those support agencies are specifically targeted for communities that have recently benefited from land restitution, working with them to make sure that those agricultural assets that have been transferred, that they flourish and don't weaken. But the details of why that is happening and whether there are grant systems in place, I'm not really able to provide that information. I know that it is one area where, in terms of urban agriculture or food gardening, that type of agriculture, there's a multiplicity of departments who are involved in it, and some people are saying that poor coordination might be one of the weaknesses. Department of Social Development are involved in food gardening and food projects. Local economic development projects, municipalities are. There's at least 4 or 5 different sector departments in government who support the sector. And it's a sector that can do with improved coordination. Chairperson, if I can ask my colleague if she would like to add.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, I would like to add on a point of IDT. The challenge with IDT is that much as they are reporting to Public Works and they are supporting us with the program, but they also do work for other departments, like social development and education. So it's not easy for us to say now they are doing ISRPP or they are now doing the work for social development. And when they start delegating or outsourcing to other agencies, that's where we experience the challenge. And on the point of agriculture, the Eastern Cape nodes particularly are the nodes that are involved a lot in those areas, partly on maize production, but also on the side of livestock improvement programs. I think the challenge is, having processing plants internally, also the marketing and the markets as such. But these are examples of projects that you can quote that are happening. Related to that, we are working with the Department of Agriculture on a program they call the Recapitalization Program, where they actually look at a number of families, about 20 families who own a certain size of